Blog Talk Radio.
Years ago, over 7,600,000 people here that work there.
The following takes place between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m.
Good afternoon. It's Friday, August the 7th. Is that right? 8th? 7th? 8th! August the 8th. It's 8-8, 2-14. And this is the last word. I never know what date is because when you're up till 5 o'clock in the morning, every day runs into one another.
That's true.
Sleep
is for the weak.
Sleep is for the weak. You sleep when you're dead. And, of course, if you don't get any sleep, you'll be dead anyway. But that's only half the story. That's what I'm saying. Hey, what's I have my former nicotine-stained fingers, I have the answer to my prayers.
About
a probe. I'm going to have a probe put in my back.
Ouch.
It's a... what they call, let's see, I want to get this correct. It's called a spinal cord stimulation therapy.
Ooh, I like the word stimulation. Sounds fun.
Yeah, well.
When you're talking about nerves and
before,
spinal cords, that's some stuff you won't be stimulating.
Before I get this done, it's going to be checked out 12 days from Sunday. So, so we're talking about to help me with the sciatica because this is outrageous. I can't take it. I got my seventh epidural already, and it gets from bad to worse here.
Oh.
So, we got a great show today. We're going to have me and you. We're going to have Grace.
Dr. Grace.
Dr. Grace. David Adams is going to be stopping by.
Very good.
We're going to have Mark Freeland, who's running for the Mecklenburg County Chair for the Democratic Party. And that election is tomorrow. So all you people here in Charlotte, North Carolina, where we are broadcasting on this miserable, getting ready to pour for the next 2 days, city.
It's just a liberal drizzle.
It's a liberal drizzle. We're going to have a new chair for the Democratic Party, so we'll be voting on that if you are a precinct chair, president, or vice chair. We're also going to have Mr. Earl Schachter, who is, as he says, a bleeding heart liberal, and he's running against that moronic Larry Pittenger. 82nd District.
And I'll just give people a teaser.
A teaser?
When we get to that part of the conversation, we'll find why, quotes, no less than Western civilization itself hangs in the balance.
Absolutely. I'm sure of that. And we're going to have, we got a big show coming up. Well, we got two big shows, but the big show is September the 6th. Here in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the Neighborhood Theater, we are having the legendary group Blue Magic with Richard Pratt live and in person on the Neighborhood Theater stage. And we're going to have, it's going to be a great show lineup. We got a comedian, young lady who's fabulous. She's coming in from New York. You guys will know her. We're going to have a Unique, the band, and the singer Tonice. She's very good. This girl is tall. I mean, when she first came into the meeting, first time that I said, the basketball team doesn't meet me. She had on 5-inch heels, and she's already 6 foot something.
Intimidate much?
Duh. I said, could you please sit down so I can still look up at you, but not as high?
Hey,
so
you got this back problem.
That's right. I couldn't do it. I pleaded of, back problem. Anyway, Tonice, she has a great voice. She's going to be singing. on the show. We're going to have an open bar. What?
We were listening to Blue Magic earlier.
That's right. Well, we're going to have, and, you know, I'm sorry, but I will get, next week we will be able to play their new CD, but we have a couple of things we're going to play. And Richard will be joining us about 5:30. And but this event is going to be great. As I said, September the 6th, starting at 6:30 to 7:30, is the VIP reception, open bar. You'll get VIP seating when the show starts. You also get, as I said, open bar for an hour. You also get an autographed copy of their new album, CD, and an autographed picture.
Wow.
Now, you can go online at www. Let's see if I don't mess this up. www.cmcnclc.event, E-V-E-N-T, Bright, BRITE.com. Tickets for the in advance for the VIP tickets, I believe, you got the thing over there?
$55.
If you want to come to VIP but you don't get in the line, you come to the door, it's $60. It's $100 for a couple. $35 general admission tickets. It's $45 at the door. So I suggest everybody get those general admission tickets on CMC, NC, BLC, .eventbrite.com. ASAP. We'll be talking about it. And the Blue Magic is going to be appearing here at one of the radio stations so we can get to make the connection. So it's going to be a great, great show. And then we're also having something at Our Lady of Consolation Catholic Church on the 16th, which is next week. We will be sponsoring. Oh, yes, I would inform my. Screwed up and didn't give everybody the address. It's 511 East 36th Street in Noda. And, oh, if you want to call for information, you could be reading this, so I don't crank my neck, but 609-472-8327 or 704-750-0885. That's where you can get information about the tickets for Blue Magic. And if you want to come to our – and this event is for – to get everybody to realize there is more ways than one that you could skin a cat. You don't have to stand in line in the pouring rain like it is today. You don't have to stand in line in the cold. You don't have to go to vote when they tell you to vote. You can vote up to 55 days in advance if you vote by absentee ballot. And in Charlotte, North Carolina, in Mecklenburg County, those ballots are counted at 2 p.m. And I spoke to the Board of Elections chief myself, who will be in charge of it, known him for since 1993. He is going to make sure that nothing goes wrong with those ballots. So get out and vote. Everybody in North Carolina. Start voting absentee. Take away these fools making you want to find a birth certificate from 1890.
Yeah. Look.
Take it away.
Everything they can to make it hard to vote. They've taken away our extra days. They've taken away extra locations. So your lines are going to be longer.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to drive further to get there. Vote early.
That's right. Vote early.
Do it when it's comfortable and fun. And did we mention?
Yes.
Blue Magic in an open bar.
Hey, Blue Magic
in an
open bar.
That is the way to meet people
and
that have a like-minded interest in our community.
And let me play something for you, which we will be playing again. Let me play something to remind you why you need to get out and vote and why you should vote absentee. Let me play this for you.
How many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome?
Good government.
They want everybody to vote.
I don't want everybody to vote.
Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of the country, and they are not now.
As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections of Canada is not the
voting populace goes down.
Hey, now, what's that all about?
That fool. I've never heard that before.
Never heard that before, huh?
That's kind of scary.
Hey.
What, he doesn't want us to vote?
Of course not. Why do you want you to vote?
You mean...
you heard what he says. When you vote, we don't win.
That might be the founding principle of conservative politics right here.
When you don't, when you vote, we do not win. And I'm talking about we, the people, don't win.
Yeah, repeat that, please, because there was a certain document at the founding of our country.
The document, document, what was it?
To use
grocery list.
We, the people.
Grocery list.
Like
we, the people, want some vegetables for dinner.
Didn't it, they even wrote, like, we, the people, in bigger letters and stuff, trying to make a point, I think, anyway.
We, the people, we, the people. I don't know, maybe people didn't misunderstood that. Maybe I should, let me play that one more time. It's short. Let me play one more time.
How many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome?
Good government.
They want everybody to vote.
I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections quite candidly goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Now, you know...
And that's direct.
And here's the thing. It wasn't said like Mitt Romney did it in a closed... 47%. This is said out in public in a stadium. The man, they have no morals.
One of their national conventions. I mean, that is what they stand for.
And tell us what this fool, Mr. Pittenger, has done to North Carolina. Can't say it all because we don't have enough time today.
I want to stress this part of it because, and this changed today, but when I came in, we had breaking news. We just started dropping 500-pound bombs on ISIS, those Islamic terrorists that are trying to take over Iraq right now. This is kind of important, you might say. There's a certain body he sits on, Larry Pittenger does. He's the chairman of.
Chairman, is that, door catcher?
That might be what you'd call an important post. But he's the chairman of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare.
Well, maybe he should go over there and see what's going on.
Well, you would think this is an important post following 9/11.
You would think.
Now, this man, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, he said... And then reaffirmed, even in our local paper, the Charlotte Observer, that enemy number one, his quote, enemy number one in the world is Barack Obama.
Enemy number one.
The President of the United States, which he sits in Congress serving, the Commander-in-Chief of all of our forces, is the enemy. And he stated that he is one of these birthers or something. But anyway, he states that he is a plant that's taken over because of the, quote, Islamo-communist upbringing, unquote, that he's had.
Islamo-communist. So I guess Harvard is an Islamo-communist. Let's see. What was the school that he went in New York City? Huh?
The heartland of communism.
Well, see, I was born to speak again. I just reject the fact that he says I am from a communist state.
So, I mean, but this is the importance of elections because you get fools like this here who then get to sit on important lawmaking bodies and say things like, the number one threat and the number one enemy of the United States of America is the President of the United States.
Well, that's why we have coming to our rescue Earl Schachter. And as a matter of fact, he's with us right now. Mr. Schachter, welcome to these mics.
Hello, Michael. How are you? Hello?
I'm trying to make it. So Barack Obama is the number one enemy against the United States, according to Pittenger.
Well,
do you have to say?
There are many, many millions of Americans who feel that way. Misguided as they are, they feel that way. Uninformed as they are, they feel that way.
But what I don't understand is, if there's so many of them, why didn't they win? Well, blown out two consecutive...
There's not so many of them. There's a certain number of them. Luckily,
okay.
They're still in the minority.
Well...
Can you imagine if they became the majority?
No, I can't imagine that. That's
well,
only
just look at... Look at 1930s Germany, and you will see.
Well, but see, you got to remember, East Germany was a... I had more people living in my block in East Ellenburg than lived in Germany. So, you know, that you know, we have 400 million people here, or 350 million people here. It's a big difference. So, you know, you can get these small half-ass blocks of people who are half-brained, but they're only 25%. The problem is, it's not them. It's the, well, they're only 15%. The problem is the 25% that never vote, that will help those 15% get in.
By the way, in 1930s Germany, the Nazis never got a majority of the vote. Hitler became the dictator, the Nazi Party. The most they ever got was 43% in a free election.
Right. Well, but 43 is a lot more than 15. But see, the problem is here is that we have people who walk around who are unconscious. Actually, this is me saying it. They're unconscious.
Of course. I'm running against one. I'm running against somebody like that.
Oh, you are? Oh, okay. Well, the thing is, and that's the problem. When you're unconscious, you don't realize you're being victimized.
Of course. By the way, I was listening a few minutes, during that recording. You know who that fellow was? The Secretary of the State of Ohio.
Yes, I know. Paul Weinrich.
Yeah, that was 1980, I believe.
Yes, right.
He's the founder of ALEC.
That's right. Is he still alive?
Can you imagine?
Is he still alive?
I don't believe he's alive.
Yeah.
But no. his creations live on. Well, you know, the fellow I'm running against... He believes in the voter ID in North Carolina,
right?
And he tells a joke, which of course by my definition is not a joke. This is what he says. By the way, his name is Larry Pittman. This is what he says.
Pittman, right.
A friend of his was walking down the street, and he was hitting two sticks together. So someone went up to this person and said, "Why are you hitting two sticks together?" And he said, "To keep the Bengal tigers away from North Carolina." So his friend said, "Are you ridiculous? There's no Bengal tigers in North Carolina." And he said, "See, it works." And that was Larry Pittman's philosophy about voter fraud. If we have strict voter ID to keep fraud away, you see, it'll work. Just like keeping the Bengal tigers away.
So what he's saying is that for the last 200 years or so, almost 200 years, we've been hitting sticks together?
Apparently
who's been doing
well,
that?
No, that's what he's doing now.
No, in reality, of course, that what they're doing is they're creating a solution to something that isn't a problem.
Right, absolutely, right.
But in their minds, they have to justify. See, my opponent says, "I am not prejudiced. It's not that I want to have black people not voting or minorities. I just want to keep the voter fraud down." Now, of course, in North Carolina, it's almost non-existent.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you know the statistics on voter fraud in North Carolina.
It's like 3.31
well,
or something like
that. In 2010, which was not an election, a presidential election year, 4 million voters voted in North Carolina. There were 28 alleged cases of voter fraud, and not one was subject to prosecution. So, in other words, not one prosecution. In 2012, a presidential election year, 7 million people voted. There were 121 alleged cases of voter fraud, and only five were subject to prosecution. So five people were subject to prosecution in 2012 for voter fraud in the whole, out of 7 million voting in North Carolina.
And were they prosecuted?
They were. But does that mean we have to upend and overturn our traditions and the laws and really prevent people from voting? Thousands and thousands of people are prevented. My mother is 93. She has no driver's license, no picture ID. She voted all her life, moved to North Carolina now, and she won't be able to vote. But she voted, you know, who knows, 60, 70 years.
Well,
right.
you heard what Paul Weyrich says.
They don't want people to vote, of course not.
They don't care if their own people don't vote.
That's right. That's right. They want to keep the numbers of voters down. If you only have two people voting in the whole presidential election in this country, you're probably going to win.
That's right, because they'll all be Republicans.
Right. So therefore, they don't want people to vote. That's their logic. They forget that we live in America. The whole idea is, look how we've expanded the vote in the last 200 years. Remember how it started with the Founding Fathers, right? You had to be a property owner. You had to be a white male. And a property owner, white male, to vote.
And
look how far we've come since then.
You remember just this year, one of those lady representatives from Texas or whatever said that the problem occurred in America when they gave women the right to vote.
Yeah, right.
That's when everything started going downhill.
Started going downhill.
It
took until 1920 to get that.
That's right. That's right.
Well, here's an example, real quick, since he brought it up about hitting sticks and keeping Bengal Tigers around. This is another perfect Pittman example of that philosophy. He wants to bring back public hangings.
Public hangings. And you know who's first on his list? He actually
Barack
said
Obama.
This. No. Well, that goes without saying. No. Gynecologists who perform abortions. Are the first, if they perform abortions, those are the first people who should be publicly hanged. Now, he forgets, of course, that there's no law against a gynecologist doing an abortion. So, in other words, he advocates hanging people who haven't committed a crime.
Hanging doctors who are legally performing their duty.
Yeah, but see, the problem is...
But it's not illegal.
Here's the thing. They cannot rule abortions illegal, no matter what state it is, even though they close down these clinics. They just make it impossible for them to do their job.
That's what I'm saying. It's not illegal, so how can you hang somebody for not committing a crime?
As Judge Roy Bean said one time, let's give them a fair trial, then hang them.
And then hang them.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
representative, huh?
You know, see, the law.
And I'm running against him.
That's right. Hey, you know.
You better watch out.
Better wear a heavy collar.
Keep that neck.
He carries a gun.
Does he?
Oh yeah.
Carry a noose around. Wow. What a guy.
these guys are killing. What I want to ask you, why did you get into this race?
Well, I got into this race actually on a personal level. The personal level is I have 6 grandchildren here in North Carolina. And, of course, 2 daughters and their husbands. But the 6 grandchildren, Larry Pittman is also totally against public education. He believes in homeschooling. The only people who should go to public school are people who can't afford to stay home and homeschool their children. I don't want my grandchildren to grow up in a overwhelmingly stupid society in North Carolina. Public education, let's face it, is like the foundation of our society. So he's against public education, and that's on a personal level. So I don't want my grandchildren to grow up in that kind of society. Also, you know, his own party, the Republicans, are totally embarrassed by him. They tried to find someone to run against him in the primary. They picked the wrong person. She didn't run a good campaign. She lost overwhelmingly.
Yes.
But if his own party is embarrassed by him and by the statements he has made, you know, there was a town hall meeting back in October, a Tea Party town hall meeting in Concord, but I wanted to see it because the lieutenant governor was coming, Dan Forrest.
Yeah.
So he was late, so what they did was they asked Larry Pittman to speak for 10 minutes because this guy was stuck in traffic. And Larry Pittman made his joke about Obama being from Kenya. What he didn't know was somebody was filming it, and that night it was on Rachel Maddow's show. So Rachel Maddow was doing a show on incredibly dumb Southern politicians. And, of course, Larry Pittman made the cut that day.
He's only got an hour's
Larry
show.
I'm sorry?
She only has an hour's show.
I know. But Larry, what got me was I saw it in person that day, and that night it was on Rachel Maddow's show. You know, this is the fellow who represents we the people in Cabarrus County. I mean,
okay.
Mind-boggling.
That's just what I wanted to say. We're talking about, see, it's we the people. It's them. When they say we, they don't mean us. They mean them.
No, of course not. You don't count. We don't count. They, their philosophy is what counts, of course.
Absolutely.
They are the same fanatics, whether it's Al-Qaeda, the Nazis. It doesn't matter. These are fanatical people.
Yeah.
And they don't even care if they win. They figure they'll eventually win. Eventually they will win. That's why they run these losers against, you know, these in other states, governors and senators.
Right.
They hope they win, but they don't really care. They just want to shake things up and try to win a primary. They don't care about the election. They know eventually in their minds they'll win.
Well, no,
that's how fanatics think.
Well, when you say win, see, I don't believe...
Win an election.
I don't think they ever think they're going to win. What they want to do is completely tear apart and rip down the Republican Party and rather have it a small party. You know, or who's the one that said, I'd rather serve in hell than serve God in heaven? How did I put that?
Lucifer.
Right.
Milton. Lost.
Yeah, right. Paradise Lost. Yeah, you know, so they don't care if it's a party of five people.
They eventually want to be in charge. They want to be in charge eventually.
Yes, but
because their way is the only way.
No, you see, but
as they'll tell you,
I have
the Christian way.
Right.
No, they want to win eventually.
I don't believe they want to win. I think they just want to be in charge of their own little world. See, because they're not in charge of anything now. They're not in charge of anything.
They're in charge basically of the House of Representatives.
Right, but you see...
They've come quite a long distance.
They're really not in charge of the House. They're in a position to make it difficult because the Republicans have no spine to stand up for what they believe.
For whatever reason, I think it's safe to say they control the House of Representatives. And maybe soon the Senate.
Well,
think about it.
You need to win.
That's frightening if you think about it.
what do you plan on doing? You, a lone voice in the night, when you get there and you see,
overwhelmingly stupid,
and you see the nonsense that's going on, do you go out and get a whip and a Clyde BD gun and stand up every day and fight it? Because that's what you're going to have to do.
Yeah, that's what I will have to do. But, you know, we have to start somewhere. And I really believe, for example, I'm the only person running, only Democrat running in Cabarrus County. I mean, I know the sheriff is running, but he's running unopposed, so I don't count that as running. I'm the only Democrat. Possibly if I win in 2 years, other Democrats will say to themselves, I have a chance. If a guy like Earl Schechter can win,
that's right,
I have a chance. So that's what I'm looking forward towards. If that happens, well, terrific. People will gain some courage. Democrats will gain courage and run.
Well, what are some of the things that, or a couple of the things that you'd like to change when you get
involved? Well, for example, in Cabarrus County, the county commissioners don't, and the current ones, don't believe at all in offering incentives of any sort to create jobs by attracting business. Luckily, the Republicans got so tired of these three people control the county commission. They're all Tea Party. So the Republicans in the primary voted them out, and there are now three progressive Republicans. It's hard to – that's a real oxymoron, but anyway, more moderate Republicans, more moderate Republicans. And I have met with a number of them, and they believe in public education, and they believe in jobs in the economy in terms of creating incentives. So I can work with them, and I explain to them my philosophy is I work with you on these issues, and then on the other state issues, I know they don't agree with me, you know, things like raising the minimum wage or the 500,000 people in North Carolina who have no health coverage. But I'll work with them locally and every day scream to the rafters in Raleigh about the issues that are really important to me. Well, I'm not saying those aren't, but to me, you know, I think I told you, Michael, for 10 years I was a counselor for at-risk students at our high school in upstate New York, and I witnessed extreme poverty, people with no food, people who had to come to the high school for the subsidized lunch just to have one meal a day, you know, young people, students. People who had no heat. Upstate New York in the winter is outrageous. These people had no heat. No heat. Can you imagine? Every night, no heat. The only time they felt warm was when they came to the school building. And, in fact, they purposely stayed late every day so they could stay in the building an hour or longer. I mean, how sad. So I've seen the way these people suffer. You know what it's like to watch a kid who has a toothache for a month? Sore throats, earaches, things like that, and they never see a doctor. We have 500,000 people in North Carolina who are eligible, you know, for the Medicaid expansion. I'm sure you know this, and yet the General Assembly and the governor won't go along. It's free money from the federal government for 3 years, and then the government pays 90% after that. These people are such fanatics when it comes to Obama. They'd rather see their fellow citizens suffering extremely than do what won't cost them a dime. Get them health coverage. That's a half a million people.
Well, you know, it's just like, and I was listening to the news last night and today, Putin, and we're going to talk about this later, he's now put a stop on all imports from the United States, especially because of what Obama is doing with the sanctions, and no more chickens. I can't remember what the quote or how many. Well, they get all practically 85% of all their chickens for the United States.
Yeah.
He is now putting his people under the bus,
right,
so he can invade a country. This is the same mentality. And they're talking about communists and fascists. I mean, this is the same thing that they're doing in Russia. And you know what they did in China? China is coming more to the liberal side every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
Look at World War II. How do you think the Russians really defeated the Germans? I mean, they were brave, they were courageous, everything. Look at the Battle of Stalingrad. That's where Stalin made his famous statement, not one step back, because the KGB was right behind the Russian army. And
yep.
if you dared do anything, the KGB would just kill you. How? So Germany couldn't defeat an army like that. That was forced to fight, basically.
But
the Russian leadership traditionally doesn't care about its own people.
Well, right. Remember, they burnt all their foods all their food stocks as they retreated. So the Germans thought they could get food from the Russians, but there was none there because it was burnt up.
Right. Well, that's a common thing to do in war, whether whether you burn an oil well or a factory, whatever. You don't want the enemy to get hold of it. But how about treating your own people that way?
Forget it.
That's worse. I mean, think about that. Can you imagine saying to an army, this is it. You're going to stand here and we'll kill you if you try to retreat. That's how you win. That's how they won at Stalingrad.
Yeah, well, Hitler said that also to Rommel when they got a foot on the in Normandy. He said they didn't fight, they all die. It's the same thing. So all these fanatics say that. They all say it because they have the same mentality.
The only difference between Stalin and Hitler was Stalin took the advice of his generals. Hitler never took the advice of anyone. That was the basic difference.
Yeah. He took his advice. Yeah, but he appointed all the generals too.
First he killed them all in the late 30s.
Right.
You know, he killed all his generals and colonels and whatever. But during the war, he did listen to them.
Yep.
Hitler would never.
So tell us, when is the election, and how can people get in contact with you to give you money, to help you on your campaign, help you at the polls? What do they have to do?
Well, again, the election is November 4th. My opponent is Larry Pittman. My name is Earl Schechter. I'm the Democrat, of course. My phone number, 704-787-8690. Email, Eddie, E-D-D-I-E, dot Schechter, S-C-H-E-C-T-E-R, at gmail.com. When I think of my background compared to my opponent, how anybody can vote for my opponent to me really stretches my mind. Given my background, whether it's a state probation officer in Florida, the counselor for Irish students at the high school, I own many businesses. I was an investigator for the Office of Probation in New York City. I was a fundraiser in New York City who raised millions of dollars. And his background was he worked in a factory. Now he's some sort of pastor at a Presbyterian church. And,
he's a pastor. Oh, that's it. That's it. So that gives him
the
advantage.
He's got the Tea Party, definitely, of course, in his side. He just came out with a statement that he believes that if you're 16 and you are convicted of committing a crime, you, in no uncertain terms, you have to go to an adult prison. And he is some sort of pastor at a church.
Hey, no one said forgiveness had to be his modus operandi.
Yeah. Let me read something. I have something here. Let me read something. Let me just tell you, this should tell you all you need to know about Larry Pittman, my opponent. Here it is. God designed male and female to produce and parent children together. His word clearly condemns any, and he can't say the word sexual, so his word clearly condemns any blank intercourse other than between a husband and wife in marriage. Unmarried, hetero, and he can't say again the word sexual, couples living together, or sodomite, or, and then there's a blank, couples. He's afraid of words. Cannot possibly teach a child moral living. No child should be subjected by the state adoption laws to such a daily environment of sin and perversion. Now, this is the man who represents Cabarrus County in Raleigh.
Hey, you know, I just saw a news item on some friends of his. ISIS told all the religious minorities of Iraq to convert or they would kill them all. So they issued that order today. So
that's
right.
What guy?
Those are the ones up on the mountain, right?
That's right.
Sounds like a little
40,000 Christians, some sort of Christian. That's why we bombed them and dropped food supplies. They had 40,000 of these people trapped on a mountaintop, no food or water. And they said, if you try to come down, we'll kill you.
That's right. Well,
this is Larry Pittman saying the same thing.
He's saying the same thing.
The man who can't even say words.
Well, you know, the old saying, Earl, is the last bastion for a scoundrel is the flag and religion.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Or how about don't confuse me with the facts? My mind's made up.
Hey, but, yeah, or just don't confuse me with the facts because I have no mind.
How true.
See, well, I'm very glad to have you on the show today, Larry. And it's November. I want you back on the show again and tell me how the campaign's going.
It's Earl, not Larry.
What am I saying, Larry? Jeez.
I don't know.
That's
my opponent. When are you having my opponent on?
Hey, he's welcome to come on.
I know he is.
I don't think he wants to hear from me or this show.
I have a feeling you're right.
I can say words like sexual.
Oh, you think if we said sexual, he might hang up?
Of course, he doesn't want to hear words like that.
You know what? I think we should invite him. Go personally invite him. Yes.
Why don't you?
Oh,
he lives in Concord.
We'll start the show with the song with the song "Sexual Healing," and then we will Marvin Gaye's famous hit, and then we'll just go right into it. What and since the Fourth Circuit just ruled that same-sex marriage is legal, is he now going to move?
Are you asking me?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, where does Pittman go?
The Fourth Circuit, which covers us in Virginia, in Washington, in North Carolina, South Carolina, just ruled that same-sex marriage is legal. So does he have to move now?
Well, probably not, because it's the state law still bans same-sex marriage.
No, yeah, but the federal law trumps that.
Federal law just said it.
Federal law trumps state law. So
I agree with you, it does, and I'm not an attorney, but I happen to know for a fact in North Carolina, same-sex marriage is banned today.
Well, no, now wait.
They
just passed that
amendment.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, they passed the constitutional amendment. That isn't law yet, because
it's law
in the state. But
they are overturning
it. It's already overturned. It'll be overturned probably the next CD. But I'm saying that federal.
They can appeal it, right?
Yeah, they can appeal it, but how do the Supreme Court is not going to overturn the Fourth Circuit. They're not going to do it.
Okay.
And especially, the Fourth Circuit is Republican elected judges. What are you going to say? You guys didn't know what you're talking about? Ronald Reagan appointed you? Well, he didn't know what he was talking about. He was senile. I mean, what are they going to say? The Fourth Circuit has ruled same-sex marriage is legal and is constitutional. So the ban on marriage.
And that takes in North Carolina?
Absolutely takes in North Carolina. So there's nothing this state can do about same-sex marriage.
So there should be same-sex marriage pretty soon in North Carolina. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely correct.
Should be.
Absolutely correct.
I mean, there's no way to stand. I mean, they can fight it, but they're going to lose.
But they're going to lose because they're not going to overturn the Fourth Circuit. Because this is the third federal circuit. I mean, the third group from the district to the appellate to now the Supreme Court, which is the Fourth Circuit, that's ruled in its favor.
Yeah.
So,
well, I hope you're right. I really do.
So,
Before we let Earl go, I would like to ask real quick, do you have, I don't know, 3, 5, something like that, key points that you want to stress for your campaign that we can tell? Because we've talked about, you know, everything from ISIS to Pittman's craziness, but let's just let you talk about you for 1 second. So what are your key talking points that you would like to cover this election?
Well, again, public education and jobs and the economy have to be number one and number two. And then voter ID, women's issues, you know, health issues, and in fact all health issues, very important, raise the minimum wage, increase unemployment benefits. Imagine North Carolina cut unemployment benefits. And those are my key issues.
Okay.
I mean, voter ID is so important, such an important issue. But of course, the minimum wage. These people in Raleigh don't understand how the economy really operates. They don't understand what a consumer-driven economy is. The more money you have in the economy, the more money will be spent, and therefore jobs will be created.
The brother's model of how an economy is supposed to work. You just start at the top with a big pile of money, and then the coins roll off on people's heads.
Well, that's Ronald Reagan's trickle-down stuff.
True.
But, of course, it never trickles down.
Of course not. There's, with all the money, they can buy bigger pockets, so nothing falls out.
Of course. To me, Ronald Reagan was... Well, he was an actor playing a role and surrounded by the most odious people in politics. Do you remember the people around Ronald Reagan?
They were quite horrible.
Meese,
remember Meese?
Yeah, General Meese.
Ed Meese. And I mean, how many people in Reagan's administration were indicted? And many were found guilty. He committed treason.
Yes, he sure did.
Did I tell you, Michael, do you know where he opened his campaign? He had his choice of any city in the United States.
Yes.
You'd be talking to the native today.
That's right.
That's where he's from.
From Philadelphia, Mississippi.
Yes.
And that's where he opened his campaign.
Yes.
Which, ironically,
is that unbelievable? That was his message to the people. do you remember when he went to an SS cemetery in Germany?
Yes.
And he said a few words there, and Elie Wiesel said, "You shouldn't be here." But he went to a Waffen SS cemetery
to say
a few words.
Is that what he said? Well, before you go, Earl, we have our general resident, Dr. Stahouse. Dr. Grace Lee is on the line. Dr. Grace Galloway.
Hello.
Hi, Earl.
Hi.
How are you? I was listening into some of what you were saying, and, it's very interesting. Earl's a historian, by the way. That's one of his hobbies. You probably picked up on that right now, huh?
A little bit.
How are you, Grace?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. He is from my neck of the woods, and he is going to give Larry Pittman a good run for his money. We have to get Larry Pittman O-U-T out. I mean, this guy, Larry Pittman, is the moron who put up the resolution to have Christianity declared as the official religion of North Carolina.
Right, state religion. State religion.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Really?
He did, yes.
Yeah,
that was
did.
The part of the 1860 Congress we got going on.
Now, you see, now I have a problem. You see, now you said, Earl, that, you know, Pittman wants to get rid of he wants private schools and, you know.
No, homeschooling.
Homeschooling. Oh, so
with one
in other words, is he saying that he didn't learn enough when he went to school? That he could learn
well, he
more
demonstrates that every day.
Look, all right, these are those evangelicals that don't believe in education at all. They believe in only one book. And they think that everything will just be, you know, magically given to you by divine intuitions. But
yeah, but it's not just one book. Only one part of the book, Revelation.
Pittman also voted to do away with to cut short the unemployment benefits. He was leading the charge on opposing Medicaid expansion. He actually said that giving people Medicaid and giving people unemployment is akin to reinforcing laziness. He called people who are unemployed and who wanted Medicaid, called them lazy. This is the person that we have representing the 82nd District in Cabarrus County. It is a shame.
Well, it's more than a shame. What's the statistics?
It's hard to believe.
What's the statistics in Cabarrus County of people that are unemployed? Anybody know?
The percentage?
Yeah, unemployed people.
Is that what you said?
Yes.
I'm not sure, but I know it's higher than Charlotte.
Well, I hope it's higher than Charlotte.
Is higher than Charlotte, yeah.
Oh, but that's a problem, because we got more people than them. So it shouldn't be higher than Charlotte.
Because Charlotte is much more populated than Cabarrus, and so if our percentage is higher, that's not good.
Plus, Charlotte is trying to attract business and jobs.
Yeah.
We're not.
That's right.
What is the base of African Americans, Hispanic, and whites there?
In Cabarrus County. The population of black and brown people is approximately 25%, which is surprising.
Yeah, that's surprising. But so, am I then able to translate that there are more white people unemployed?
Just like there's more white people collecting welfare.
Black and brown
is still higher than that among
whites. Because, right. So therefore, he doesn't want white people to vote either.
Those people you're talking about may vote for the Democrats. Therefore, he doesn't want them to vote.
We see that all the time. It gets worse if you educate the people. They will vote Democrat. It all works. Have no education, and you have no job, and you stay home, and you cry in the dark, and you read your Bible.
But isn't this, Earl, getting back to what you said before, isn't this the same way that the Nazis were able to win over the hearts and minds of the people in Germany because they were not as educated?
The country of Germany was the most educated and sophisticated in Europe.
But the people
more Nobel Prize.
He went after the
uneducated Germans.
That's right. That's what I'm saying.
Like Berlin laughed at him. The people who lived in a place like Berlin laughed at him.
right. Absolutely correct. And that's what I was saying. So it's the same thing here. You go after
sure.
the uneducated and the people that don't have anything. The people who
right.
day to day.
People who are angry. You go after the people who are angry, and you can focus them, focus their anger on a certain group of people. These fanatics, these Tea Party people, blame minorities for everything. And angry people believe it because they don't even have a job. They have no hope. If you have no hope, you're easily vulnerable to anybody who comes along and tells you who to hate.
We see
that's what the Germans did.
Right. And all people did. Well, see, now that this is, please explain this to me. To me, if you had unemployment in the black and Hispanic communities so bad, why wouldn't they go after and try to convert those black and Hispanics? And I'm going to answer my own question. Because they're racist. That's why. The same thing, you go after people who are unemployed, who are uneducated, who are down and out. Why would you go after black and Hispanics? Because you're racist. They're going after
a
group.
Why do you hate Obama? Why do they hate Obama?
Because he's not from Kansas. Oh, his mother was.
He is from Kansas. The white part ain't white enough.
Well, they don't want to say that. They say he's from, you know, where.
Yeah, he's from the other right.
He's from Kenya.
But what did they understand about this? That it doesn't matter if he's from Mars. His mother was born here.
Right.
Or that trumps everything.
Well, it's strange that you just said the word Trump.
Yeah, well, I'm a little play on words there. A little play on words.
Yeah.
I only mentioned it because of your New York connection, that's all.
Well, look, we don't want to get into too much of this because, you know, then we get all into cruise land, mixing up Canada, Cuba, Texas.
But this is the thing that bothers me. We have people who keep saying it, and Donald Trump to today is saying it. He wasn't
right.
He's born in Canada. But it does not matter. What don't they understand about this? And then the thing is, then they'll tell me, yeah, Cruz, who we know was born in Canada, whose father is an illegal alien, we're still trying to figure out how he got from Cuba to the United States, to Canada, without putting his foot on the United States property without getting arrested. How is that even?
Yeah.
We don't even know. So, you know, how is it all right for Cruz to be born in another country, but Obama couldn't be born in another country?
Well, look, John McCain wasn't born in this country.
He was born in Panama. Absolutely.
Right. Well, he was supposedly born on his head on an American possession.
There we go. But here's the thing. You know, people will make a million excuses. I'm talking about the right-wing nut job people, okay? They will make a million excuses for their guys, but they will find everything they can. Whatever applies for their guys does not apply for our guys and vice versa. You know, they have the most amazing ability to be selectively prejudiced. Mm-hmm. I mean, they'll claim they're not racist. They'll claim they're not prejudiced.
Sure.
But they're only selectively so. They'll pick and choose.
Well, look, Donald Trump said he wanted to see Obama's grades in college. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy was in Harvard Law School. He was editor of the Law Review at Harvard Law School. That is number one editor of the Harvard Law Review. And yet a buffoon like Donald Trump,
was
questioning his grades.
Yeah, I want to see Donald Trump's grades, please.
Oh, I can only... What's Sarah
Did
Palin's
Trump
grades?
Even graduate
can you
from grade school?
Even if he got in there because he got a pass because he was black, because he was poor, he got into... Okay, that
That's not the criteria to become the head of the Harvard Law Review.
Right. And by the way, he didn't get in because of affirmative action.
You think? So therefore, whatever happened.
Yeah, they have a little bit of horsepower.
A little bit of horsepower. Yeah. So whatever happened, none of that had anything to do with being the head of the Harvard Law Review.
Of course.
And they talk about, he doesn't know the law. He's a constitutional lawyer. What the hell is wrong with these people?
right. And they question him.
Yeah, and they question him. I mean, it's so unbelievable. None of them got in there. None of them could qualify.
But they only question him on Fox News.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it, they're not going to be on another show and start saying these things.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about Larry Pittman. And Larry Pittman's absolute disrespect of this president, I'm pushing for Earl, obviously. I want Earl to win this election. I want him to beat Larry Pittman. I don't care if he beats him by one vote or 1,000 votes, but he's going to beat Larry Pittman because Larry Pittman has managed to embarrass his constituency. He's embarrassed us by his comments about the president, his comments about what he's done. You know, he and Tom Tillis are hand in hand. They're both doing the same darn thing.
Oh, sure.
Everything that they have done has not helped that North Carolina.
It's hurt.
Larry Pittman runs around. Let me tell you what Larry Pittman does, because I've seen him do this with my own eyes. He runs around talking about how he is pro-veteran and how everywhere he goes when he sees a vet, he shakes their hand and he pretends to be so starstruck by veterans. Well, you know what, Larry Pittman? You're so starstruck by veterans, but yet your voting record in Raleigh is completely counterintuitive to veterans' benefits. How explain that, Larry Pittman? That's what I want to know. Now, by the way, Larry Pittman never served one second in the military. Earl Schechter is a veteran.
Is that
by the way, John Wayne never served a day either.
Who's that?
So I would rather have a veteran serving me in the legislature, the General Assembly in Raleigh, than to have Larry Pittman, who is nothing but a hypocritical weasel.
Of course. That's a perfect description. I usually say an uneducated racist, but what you just said, Grace, is fine.
Thank you.
It fits perfectly.
It is. He's a weasel.
He's a definite weasel, of course.
I am so...
And a hypocrite.
And a hypocrite.
So,
oh, definitely a hypocrite. You know what, he just came out, you know, he's totally against income tax. He only wants sales tax. He actually believes that sales tax could pay for all the government's needs. Can you imagine that?
Sales? Oh, yes. Because
the sales
that
tax.
That's
about 30%.
Yeah, that means the people who are...
who are the poorest... And keep spending things that they don't even really need, those people buying will pay the sales tax.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely correct.
But no income tax.
Well, we're going the way of Kansas. Kansas is, declaring bankruptcy.
They're going the same way. That's right.
Well,
look how we reduced the taxes on the highest level wealthy people.
I mean,
Brown,
a Democratic governor in California, to bring California back from the brink of ruin to what the gubernator did to them. And here we go. Kansas is there, and we will be there, too, if we do not do something this election to clean out the General Assembly.
Sure.
So this is a wake-up call to everyone within listening earshot of my voice right now. If you do not get out there and vote, you should be ashamed of yourself.
You must vote. You have to vote.
absolutely.
Well, you see, so is he? He must be a good friend of Clive and Bundy, because Clive and Bundy doesn't want to pay taxes either.
No.
I couldn't hear the beginning of that.
Clive and Bundy.
But yeah, good friend of Clive and Bundy out there in the on his ranch with his cattle.
Oh,
he
sure,
want
of course, no taxes.
Yeah.
Of course. And he'll shoot them, or as Pittman said, if they try to take our guns away, we'll fight them. Pittman said the same thing.
It is amazing. I never thought I'd live to see the day where an elected official would encourage, you know, armed dissent of the public
right.
government. And never, honestly, never.
Well, you know, we used to call things like that kind of, you know, treasonous behavior, but you know, whatever. That's the modern-day Republican.
But now they're calling it, the word they use is sovereign, right? Sovereign behavior? They don't have to abide by federal law if they don't appreciate that federal law.
Exactly.
Yeah, well,
it could
the
be civil rights, it doesn't matter.
I
guarantee you Pittman agrees with that.
Hey, you know, Obama should just turn that around on him. I don't have to recognize your right to have a birth certificate. I'm a sovereign citizen. I just am.
Well, no,
I don't have to find your legal document.
Well, listen, I don't have to recognize Texas.
Exactly.
Because you know, you want to secede, so I'm not going to recognize the state of Texas.
Yes, it's
well, no.
Well, here's the great thing, though. We've got a, as the doctor said, a historical.
I'm not hearing a thing. I'm hearing a lot of static.
Neither am I.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do.
Okay. I was just saying that we have a problem where we have people in office now who do not believe in education. They do not believe in taxes. They do not believe in America itself. And the answer to that is Earl Shanker. This is a person who literally has all the answers. Public education, voting rights, women's rights, education for everyone, and an economic plan that just helps the
poor. Well, it's safe to say. It's safe to say they don't believe in history or science, that's for sure.
Oh, no. Hey, well, why do you have to believe in science? What has science ever given us?
Yeah.
I mean, what have they ever given us?
Yeah.
Or their version of history.
That
well,
they give us
their,
the
version, their version of science is this. When the climate change scientists, very reputable scientists, by the way, put out a paper saying that there was a very good chance that the sea level in North Carolina would rise by 36 inches within the next decade if we don't do something about global
yeah.
warming and climate change. The legislature, General Assembly didn't like that. So what they did is they passed a law stating that no one, literally no one, can claim that the sea level to rise more than 18 inches. So they did the King Lear thing. Is that
they just
amazing?
Deny
yeah.
the fact and create
yeah.
their own fact.
Yeah,
well,
there
you
go.
Yeah, here's the thing. They right. can do that in the state of North Carolina, but they can't do that with NOAA. NOAA is a federal agency, and they supersede anything they do in the state of North Carolina. Because I used to work
well,
for NOAA.
Yeah, but
so
well,
they can
know,
say whatever they want.
We know that, but it still doesn't change the fact that they're absolute morons for even passing that law.
Well, didn't they make it a law in North Carolina that you can't disclose the chemicals used in fracking?
Yeah,
yes.
they did.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
But it's a secret. But they're safe.
Yeah.
But the chemicals are perfectly safe, Earl. Don't worry about it. They're
right.
perfectly safe. Yeah.
They're also the same guys who just claimed that all the you know the ash in the rivers is cleaned up now. So drink up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sure.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's what Duke Energy maybe. Told them to say.
Hey, our Pope and Duke Energy run North Carolina, and that's the end of the story.
So, Earl, I have one question for you. Now, the plans are really lying about this Facebook page.
I I can't hear anything.
Yeah, I lost you again.
Yeah. Oh. Go ahead. Well, I heard the static that time. Go ahead. Now it's fun.
Okay. No, I just said I was glancing around on mine, and I hope this is you, but I ran across some blurb that you like jazz. Is that correct?
I consider myself to be an expert in 1930s and 40s jazz.
Oh, fantastic. Well, for that cultural touchstone alone, you'll get my vote. I love you. That's awesome. Very good, very good.
I have radio tapes that you would find astounding.
Is that right?
He's,
you may have a trip.
Well,
I even have a tape.
He's a jazz match. Okay, that's what he is. He's a jazz match. Right?
Well, let me
did I say that right?
You did.
Earl, I have to tell you, back in the old days when my father was growing up in Cleveland, Ohio, he sang with Scat Man Brothers Band.
Really?
Yes. So, I had, I grew up in a musical family, and
I can barely hear you.
Yeah. How about now?
Yeah.
You know what? It must be the weather that's coming in, because it comes in normally from Atlanta, because that's where the signal is coming from on Skype. And it just kills it. Yeah. But anyway, that's where I grew up. My mother was one of the first female black athletes.
Can't hear you.
Yeah, you're gone now, Michael.
Is that better?
Michael, you're gone. I'm in.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah.
I can.
Okay. I said that there was a my mother was one of the first female black theatrical agents in New York City.
Really?
So, yes. Yeah, so growing up, I was sitting on strippers' laps when I was 5 years old in the back of nightclubs.
That explains everything.
And that explains everything.
That explains everything.
It explains every single thing. Yeah.
I think,
yeah.
Michael, I think I told you Alan Alda's mother was a stripper.
That's right. Yeah, I do that. I do that.
Yeah.
Scott
Joplin grew up in the brothels, too.
Who did?
Who?
Scott Joplin.
Oh,
and
yeah,
Billie Holiday.
Yeah.
Billie
Holiday.
Holiday.
Yeah, absolutely. And
who, in my mind, is the greatest female singer who ever lived?
Oh, yeah.
Are they? Yep. My father used to say that. Absolutely.
Of course, in the 30s, there were black bands and white bands, and they really never played on stage together. They just weren't allowed. The first time it happened was Benny Goodman Band. But before, other than that, they just didn't, they couldn't perform together. It was against the rules.
Yes, that's true. That's true. Do you have a web page, Earl?
I have people who are just constructing it now.
Okay.
Okay, fantastic.
All right.
Is it going to be something easy and obvious like EarlChecker.com?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure, Michael, you'll get Earl back on, and he'll show you what the website is next time he's on.
Yeah, well, yeah, we want to, in 2 weeks, Earl, let's see, the week of the 16th, that's next week, so the week after that would be, what, 7th to the 21st?
Yeah, 21st.
That week?
Third. Yeah.
That will be when? What time will that be? That will be, let me look at my transiting calendar here, that will be the 22nd, Earl.
Okay.
How's that?
August 22nd.
And you let us know where people can pick up flyers, how they can help you get out in the neighborhoods, in the barracks.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
All right.
Of course, if they get out and vote, that's the most help.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll talk about absentee ballots and stuff like that, too. We should be talking about a lot of different things.
Yeah, well, you can talk about that right now. Next week, I'm going to be talking about that at my forum, about absentee ballots, how important they are.
Well, that's how the Republicans have. If there's any fraud in voting, it's absentee ballots, and it's the Republicans that are doing it.
Right.
They've been doing it. Is doing that.
Yep.
Yeah, they've been doing it forever.
Well.
Anyway, I think I've lost you all again.
Thank you, Earl, for giving us much of your time here.
Thank you for listening to me.
No problem.
See you later, Earl.
Okay, Grace, take care.
All right. It's good to listen to an authentic New York accent.
Right.
Very nice.
And what we're going to do is, I think I have something for you, Earl, that I wanted to... Now, is that better?
That's better.
Yes.
Okay, that must have been, that was on Grace's side, the static was. God, that's what that was. As soon as you hung up, it disappeared. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to play this for you. I love this song. And it's a little jazz, but, you know, it's something, it's not like Billie Holiday jazz, but it's a little jazz. Cal Tater, you know him, right?
Never heard of him.
Well,
Cal Tatum?
Cal, no. Jada. Carl Jada.
Carl Jada?
Carl Jada?
Yeah, listen.
I don't know those names.
Oh, okay. No.
Well, this is... Listen.
Watch you are.
Okay, you've heard that song before.
Oh, sure.
So that's what we're going to play for you on the way out.
Well, thank you.
And I'll be speaking to you in 2 weeks.
And by the way,
okay.
Yeah, absolute pleasure meeting you. I'm going to befriend you on Facebook and Twitter and whatnot, so look for that. But if you would, next time you contact Mike, send us a song or a riff that you like. We'll put it as your tag.
That's
next
right.
Time you're on.
That's right.
We'll have some really great jazz or swing for you. Just let me know.
All righty.
Okay. Take care.
All right. Well, Earl, be talking to you.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Mike's having a special.
Okay, we're back on. That was a little Caltata going out. Soul Sauce.
Well, now that was a Bleeding Heart liberal I love.
You like that?
Earl Schechter. He's a nice guy. I like him.
He's a nice guy. He is.
And the best part about it is he was the cure for the overwhelmingly stupid. I like that.
Well,
that should be his poster.
Speaking about the cure, I remember that line from, I can't remember. What's his name? Sylvester Stallone. Where he played the cop named Cobra.
Oh, yes, with the car, the old car.
The old car.
Yeah. That's the only thing that was good in that movie was the old car. But anyway,
and he goes into the store where the guy's got all these people hostages, and he says, I'm coming in for you. He says, you're infected. I have to get rid of you. He says, yeah, did I? Yeah, because I am the cure. Yes, well, hey, they're making another movie, Expendables 3.
Really?
That's right. So it's going to be out. Or is
everybody,
out this week.
Everybody that has ever been anybody.
You know who's bad? The bad guy in it now? You'll never guess who the bad guy is. Well, but it fixes his role. Because he is the bad guy in Hollywood now. Ever since he did that fool movie. What's that movie about Christ, The Last Temptation of Christ? Mel Gibson is the bad guy.
That
fits, right?
Yeah.
He's the bad guy. And you can see, he looks crazy.
Yeah.
He goes, you want me? You come and get me. And his eyes are off. Looks like Michelle Bachman. He's got Michelle Bachman eyes.
I was just thinking about that first time you ever seen with Danny Glover.
Yeah, he was crazy.
Not much of a stretch.
His eyes weren't like that. His eyes are like Michelle Bachman's now.
Well, he's...
Without the makeup.
He's had a few decades of drink. Let's just be nice and put it
but
that
he's
way.
Got 18 kids.
Yeah,
couple of girlfriends on the side, but he's a nice guy.
Mm.
Nice guy. Loves everybody.
Yeah.
Well, he hates everybody.
I'm looking at the poster for Expendables 3, and that's a crowd of people.
Well, Sam's in it now.
I have to get his first movie.
Since coming out of prison.
Oh, Snipes?
Snipes, that's his
really?
First movie. Yeah, since coming out of prison.
Here's a little free advice, Wesley. Pay your taxes.
Get a competent tax attorney.
Yeah. So when they give you the check for Expendables 3, just, hold it out a little bit. I'm just saying.
Give it all to him.
Yeah, do something,
And then say, and then you check on it. You say, where did this money go? Don't say you ain't got time, because they will give you time.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't have time.
So, besides the usual, I see they even got, they wrangled old Jet Li in there. They got
everybody. Well, he's back. No, that's
Antonio Banderas, Harrison Ford.
Westernegger's in it, right?
Why is Harrison Ford in here? He doesn't need to be in this
one. Oh, yeah, he's in this one. He's the...
Harrison Ford's supposed to be out in space. In a galaxy far, far away.
Ford is the guy... That is, that they hire or something to get
now, here's the one that I'm kind of not surprised at all, but disappointed that they're stooping this low.
No.
Randy Couture.
Yeah, but he's
the MMA
last
fighter.
One.
I know. I'm just.
But he's these are those are the regulars. The regular expenses.
Please,
it's
I don't want to see any of those
right?
guys.
Yeah,
they're all in.
So that's the normal crew, and they added. Because they killed one of them last time, but they have.
Please God, kill the rest.
You can't.
Well, hey, at least Stallone has given them jobs.
Well,
you got to hand him that. He's a good.
That's
he,
right.
He knows how to pay bills.
Well, so you heard about the tour that Bane is going on. They're going on a 14-state bus tour.
Pursuing the president?
Yes, pursuing the president.
Literally? Really?
Literally.
I was just making it up.
Right.
Are you
I'm not making
it
up.
Store?
I am not making this up. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Just listen to this. Alex Wagner was talking about on her show. Just listen to this.
They're so embarrassing.
The other part of this, Eugene, is that his right-hand man, Eric Cantor, is no longer part of the picture. And if you are, what is amazing about this bus tour is Boehner has also been asked, what would Republicans do if they got control of the Senate? And Boehner's response has been basically, we're not there yet, I'm not sure, we haven't talked about it. He's just focused on getting as much money in for the House races as he possibly can.
Yeah.
There's nothing to really show for you know, this session of Congress, and also the notion that they have nothing, no idea of what they'd do if they took the Senate is representative of a Republican Party in crisis. They can't agree on what they would do if they took the Senate.
Because there's really no overall agenda other than attacking Barack Obama primarily.
Right.
I was just down in Kentucky for 4 days. All the Republicans care about is taking Barack Obama's name in vain if they can do it. That's their only strategy. Boehner doesn't dare predict what the Senate Republicans could do because they don't really talk about it.
Right.
And also what the House has turned into under Boehner is basically a TV studio in which to record sound bites for your advertising.
Right. Yeah.
If they were really serious, if that's all
it's
it is,
true.
It's a TV studio. If they were serious about legislating, they would really try to make deals with Democrats. They would figure out a way to do it. They're not interested in that. They're just interested in making statements, and quite frankly, that happens some on the other side as well. But just driving around in a bus does not mean you're doing anything. It just doesn't.
But see, now they drive around a bus, but see, now you're talking about what are they going to do if they got control? This is the thing.
What would Republicans do if they got control of the Senate? And Boehner's response has been basically, we're not there yet. I'm not sure. We haven't talked about it. He's just focused on getting as much money in for the House races as he possibly can.
So, since
they have no idea. They haven't done anything except for 60 votes to repeal Obamacare, but they've done nothing. They got the least productive Congress ever recorded
ever.
In the history of the country.
They have.
And
they
now
have.
His only job now is going to be ride around the country and do a fundraising tour.
They said they have passed 450 bills.
Of what?
55 were to get rid of Obamacare, the ACA.
The other
390-something never got out of committee.
So they
could not even give them to the Senate. You can pass all the bills you want, but if you're going to pass a bill and then decline to take it across the street, down the block to the Senate, what good is it? It's not that the Senate didn't want to vote on them. They never gave it to the Senate. They voted on them because they knew it would never pass, and they didn't care if it would pass. They just wanted the show take up time because otherwise they should not be getting paid.
Yes.
That's what it is.
You know, that's when I show up at my work, if I sat around all day long bad-mouthing the CEO of the company and refusing to work and do my job, do you think they would not only keep me on?
You don't do that?
Do you think they would just sit there and allow that? I mean, I don't understand how these guys keep their jobs. I really don't.
You don't understand how these guys keep their jobs. I mean,
here's the one that I love. It, this is a dual funny.
Boehner
recently approached in Central Illinois on his bus tour. The reporters came aboard his blue rented bus. Blue.
Why wasn't it red?
I know, right?
Blue.
Okay, so failure number one.
Oh, you know what? Because the police stop anything that's red that drives them.
Oh, here we go. So they're on their blue Democratic bus tour for having a Democratic majority in all the Congress. They brought reporters on and answered questions, and he said this: we've got all the solutions, and that's one thing I've been telling the members for the last couple of weeks. We need to talk more about our solutions. People just don't know.
Yes, they don't know. Because you don't talk about your solutions. What are your solutions, dummy?
You have none.
Please, you've got no freaking solutions.
You've done nothing for years. This Congress has done nothing. Years, they've done nothing.
They've done nothing for 6 years. For 6 years, they have done nothing.
But here's the scary part. Do you want the scary part?
Oh.
In another interview, they said, what about, you know, all this repealing Obamacare, everything else you've done for 4 years? What are you doing and thinking? What do you have in store? Why are you doing this? You voted for 4 years to repeal Obamacare and said that he believes that he's doing God's bidding in the Capitol.
God's bidding?
And then a woman in the crowd screamed out, "Praise God!
Praise God. All right. All right.
And said, I have not one doubt that I'm doing exactly what God has in mind for me. So not only is this Blue Democratic bus tour, which is rather awesome, Boehner's get out of Washington and go raise money because I've been working so hard tour, not only is it a laughing stock of just ineptness, but it's God's will rolling across the country. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. I just love the ring of that.
These people were mentally defective.
Mentally
how could they
defective.
Sit around for 4 years passing no laws, and the only thing they did was 60 votes to repeal medical help for people in need, and then claim that they're successful in doing God's will? I mean, what planet are they on?
Let's just ask a doctor in house from that. And what
is doctor?
Did you hear that? What planet are they from?
That's probably from another galaxy. Listen, I lost you guys because I was going through a forest. You know, and
well,
in this dark forest, there are no towers there, man.
I think that's where we saw that static.
That's what the static was from, because
as soon as
you
dropped, it cleared
the
up.
Static cleared up.
Oh, thank you. So blame it on the Chinese girl, okay? Hold on.
Hey,
blame it on the Asian girl.
Hey, listen.
Hey, I couldn't see
the
tree for the forest.
Tell me about, what do you think about... I'm going to play this for you. I want you to tell me what you think about this complete moron who he's becoming so, I mean, out of the picture, just Rand Paul. Just tell me, just a minute.
Back to Harbaugh, Rand Paul found a shortcut to political fame, of course, by way of a hardline libertarian philosophy, which the Tea Party swallowed whole. But fast forward a few years now to now, and Paul is trying to sweep his record from the past under the rug as he prepares to make a run for the presidency. It's one thing to say you've evolved on an issue, most people have, but it's another when you try to hide your past. And on major issues like aid to Israel, civil rights, immigration, Senator Paul is making some extremely dramatic shifts. In some cases, he's even denying that he's made those shifts. What Paul is doing isn't evolution. The National Journal calls it an evasion strategy. So what were voters going to call it? What are they going to call it? Clarence, let's get right to it. Senator Paul's isolationist streak is part of what launched his political career. Of course, back in 2011, he proposed ending all foreign aid, including to Israel, as part of a radical budget blueprint to slash $500 billion in spending from the budget. But when Yahoo News asked him on Monday this week about that plan to cut aid to Israel, Senator Paul went after them with a vengeance, saying, quote, "We have never had a legislative proposal to do that. You can mistake my position, but then I'll answer the question. That has not been a position, a legislative position we have introduced to phase out or get rid of Israel's aid." Well, yesterday, he was just as defiant, quote, "I haven't proposed targeting or eliminating any aid to Israel." So when people write that, they're not really writing the truth. Unfortunately for Senator Paul, there's something called videotape. And his position when it comes to Israel couldn't have been much clearer. Take a listen.
All right, so just to be precise, end all foreign aid, including the foreign aid to Israel as well. Is that right?
Yes.
All right, Senator Rand Paul, thanks very much for coming in.
Well, Robert Costa, that seemed like a pretty definitive answer. I mean, it isn't a million years ago, and yet, well, let me ask you this. If in 2010, that was when he got elected, Senator Paul Dow said he was against parts of the Civil Rights Act, including the key part we all remember, that enforced private institutions like restaurants and hotels to serve blacks. Well, here's Paul during an interview with the Louisville Courier-Journal. Take a listen.
I like the Civil Rights Act in the sense that it ended discrimination in all public domains, and I'm all in favor of that. You had to ask me the but. I don't like the idea of telling private business owners. I abhor racism. I think it's a bad business decision to ever exclude anybody from your restaurant. But at the same time, I do believe in private ownership. Not only do I support the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, I'm a Republican who wants to restore a federal role for the government in the Voting Rights Act. I am committed and determined. I am a committed and determined advocate of the 14th Amendment that states unequivocally no state shall deny equal protection or due process. No state shall deny the natural rights of anyone.
An example in 2010, that's only 4 years ago, Senator Paul appeased the immigration red hots by proposing to change the Constitution of the United States so that kids born here to undocumented immigrants would not be granted citizenship under the 14th Amendment. He said, quote, we need to have the courts review whether or not, if you break the law to come into the United States, whether your child would be a citizen just by being born here. I think we should amend the Constitution because I don't think the 14th Amendment, which grants citizenship to people born in the United States, was meant to apply to illegal aliens. It was meant to apply to the children of slaves. Your thought? I think the 14th Amendment has been pretty handy over the years for liberals, and he's saying it shouldn't be.
For those who are here who are undocumented, should we give them a legal status? Should we document them so they can pay taxes and live legally and come out of the shadows? To that I say yes.
That's a breathtaking 180.
So, Grace, I mean, this is the same man that got up from the table and ran from Stephen King when he was being interviewed by the young lady who is the head of the Dream Coalition. So why did he run if he has said this?
Because he's a coward. Because he's a bully, and all bullies are cowards. Except in Rand Paul's case, he is, unfortunately, he sometimes sounds like he intersperses somewhat some logic in his vernacular so that, you know, you at some point in time will say, well, yeah, that makes sense. And he does that kind of to throw you off guard, I guess. But the reality is that if we have to remember that this person, Rand Paul, is a bully and nothing but a bully, and all bullies are cowards. That's what we just have to keep reminding people.
All bullies are cowards. That is absolutely correct. Yes. So the thing is, though, Stephen King is a bully, but he doesn't know it.
Well, Stephen King is an absolute idiot, because if you listen to any, if you watch that particular video any further, you'll see how he was so condescending to this young lady who, you speak very good English, he says. Oh, really?
What? Did you believe that? Here's
she speaks better English than he did.
Right.
You speak very good English. She's a college graduate.
Thank you. And grew up here.
Grew up here
in the U.S. of A. Hello.
And here's the other thing. This going back to this daggone Ted Cruz.
I was waiting for Stephen King to turn his nose 2 inches from her face and speak very slowly and very loudly so she would understand. I really was waiting for that.
Well, you know, because he is dumb enough to do that, you see. I think it was because that the cameras were there, because there was more than one camera, because there was a camera filming behind him that I don't know if he ever saw. So he might have felt a little, because he was caught off guard by her. And then when she gave him her DACA card to tear it up,
right.
He said, no, you want me to do that because it'll make a good sound bite. Nah. I see. So that, as a matter of fact, there is a matter of fact, I'm going to play this right now. Just listen to this.
Comes to the Republican Party's problems with minorities, Congressman Steve King of Iowa has taken control of the GOP clown car and is driving it into a ditch. The latest crash test was caught on tape. It happened just yesterday at an event with Kentucky Senator Rand Paul in Iowa, and it's going viral, of course. It begins with King when King and Paul are confronted by two Hispanic activists, Erica Andiola and Cesar Vargas. They are college-educated organizers able to move freely in this country now, thanks to President Obama's DREAM Act, or his DREAM Order. And that act allows some undocumented immigrants to stay in the U.S. if they've been raised and educated here, and they're safe now, and they're from the same group of people that Congressman King said most recently were drug smugglers with calves the size of cantaloupes and that they're hauling loads of marijuana across the border by the hour. Well, Senator Paul abruptly left this scene right as the confrontation began when Erica, there she is, gives Congressman King her identification card and dares him to show his opposition to the president's initiative by ripping it up. Here's what happens next.
I just don't understand why you've been wanting to do that. And for you to be fighting for us against dreamers, calling us being saying that we have to have some animals.
I say no, no. That's
I just
drugs.
Don't understand.
Please, please. You're very good. Stop a minute, stop a minute. You're very good at English. You know what I'm saying.
I was raised in the United
right,
States.
So you can understand the English language. So don't please don't. You know. No, you are, because you're saying something that's not true.
Okay, what is it?
And as I said, I spoke of drug smugglers. Now, you're not going to tell me you're one of them, are you? It troubles me a great deal that you have such disrespect for the laws in the United States.
But this is I love it. I want to make
but
sure that we
fix this. That you don't have to abide by the laws of this.
We are
go home.
Go
home. Go home. No, listen. You came from a lawless country. Do not import lawlessness into America. I am really sorry that you come from a lawless country. I hope that you can have a happy life.
Well,
but please,
you, sir. You know,
do not erode the rule
and
of law
in America. If you want to rip it, let me know. I will bring it
that
back.
That would be a nice
if
video
you
want to offer you, but that's not going to happen.
It's going to be something that you've been advocating for, and I was just giving you the opportunity for it.
Wow, Erica and Andy, just saw her there. 2 minutes for you. But give me a sense of what you expected to happen when you confronted Congressman King and what you thought of him before you saw him and what happened.
Yeah, well, see, we've been fighting really hard to be able to get DACA, right, the card that I was showing him and asking him to rip it up. And, you know, he's been fighting against it over and over again. He just took a vote in the House, pretty symbolic vote. It's not going to happen, but they passed something to get rid of DACA. So for me, it was really, if you want to fight against dreamers, show me that you really mean it and rip off my card. He didn't do it. Yeah,
did he know what you meant? I mean, Erica, let me just ask you, I've never read it before, but you made a very dramatic statement. You brought in the card that came out of a DACA, that it gave relief to young people in the country because their parents brought them here at a young age and have played by the rules and have gotten educated, learned English. You've done everything right, and you wanted him to just rip that out of your face, rip that in front of you. Did he know what you were doing? Did he even know what the card was?
I explained that to him, and apparently he's been fighting for it, I mean, against it for so long. I'm guessing he does know what it is. I mean, to me, it was more about really, like, we're fighting now to be able to expand this to our parents, right, deferred action for the president to expand his executive authority on immigration. But he, you know, Steve King has been one of the people that has been fighting against it. So for us, it's really, we're going to show Steve King who we are as dreamers. We're going to show our courage. And with this, we're hoping that the president also shows his courage against these people, against Steve King
okay.
and other Republicans, and uses his executive authority.
Let me ask you about this personal confrontation again, because people can disagree about immigration policy. It's a free country. We're going to debate this thing, and we're going to find something that's workable down the road somewhat. This guy wouldn't say to you what he said to the public. He said Hispanic people, Mexican-Americans who come here from across the border are all people who are running drugs, and they're all got the legs the size of cantaloupes because they've been carrying so much marijuana on their backs. How did he get squirm away from making that accusation against you personally when you said he was making it against you personally?
Well, see, I think that's one of the most powerful things about having dreamers speak out for ourselves. You know, we've been speaking out a couple of years now, and, you know, it's just amazing for us to be able to share our stories, and it's really hard for people now when they have us in front of them to be able to make the same anti-immigrant, you know, sometimes even racist statements against us. I mean, one of the things that he did keep saying is if I spoke English, and I was obviously speaking English to him this entire time, so
he
there was a couple of things. Yeah, I, you know.
No, he was not. Anyway, he deals in cartoons. He is a cartoon. Thank you very much. Good luck with the work. You know what you're doing. I don't have to tell you how to do your job. You're doing it. Thank you very much.
So, well, that's Rand Paul.
Yeah, he is a cartoon. I like what he said.
So he said he is a cartoon, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's a buffoon. He's more than a cartoon. He's a buffoon. He's a caricature of himself.
Well, the thing is that people need to remember about him, and he's supposed to be one of the, educated, thinking members of the Republican Party. This guy is much like Ann Coulter and all those other talking heads that
you think have something to say.
Right.
When you, as soon as you pull back the curtains, there's nothing there. This is a guy who, you know, his big claim to fame was he was a doctor, right? He's an eye doctor. He's not even board certified.
Right.
Yeah, okay. He's not even
right.
board certified.
So, you know, he's self-proclaimed doctor. Now, secondly, he has gotten in trouble multiple times for plagiarism, right? So you've got a guy who all of these great thoughts. Wow, this guy knows what he's talking about. He's literally stealing other people's ideas.
Yes.
It's just a common.
Michael, I'm going
yes.
to another forest, so I might lose you again, okay?
All right. So, yeah, so he's nothing but another plagiarist.
Yeah,
he's stealing stuff.
He's just a liar.
He's just a liar. He's absolutely correct.
And that's one thing that really irritates me about these guys, is that they get credit or they get, you know, props for being thinkers, intelligent, you know, dynamic members of society, movers, shakers, whatever. And all that. They're not. They're all lying.
And
this is one thing
that's
like the contrast between, you know, we get the Reagan was the great president, you know. Look at now we got the Bush legacy, blah, blah, blah. Reagan was an actor. He wasn't even a politician to begin with. He wasn't a deep thinker. He just read lies that were written for him. And then you got the, you know, Bush Sr. was a statesman. Bush Jr., this guy was a drug-addled fool.
He was
right?
the techie.
When,
not even
you compare and you look at, they'll tear down all day long, people like Clinton or people like Obama. You know, they've got nothing but derision and horrible things to say. Yet both of these people, one's a Rhodes Scholar, one's a constitutional lawyer. You know, we were talking earlier about, you know, you don't get into the Harvard Law review by being an idiot or just by being black and getting a pass, you know. So all of these things are, it's so insulting and it's so uneven, it makes me mad. It really infuriates me when you put them on the same playing field.
Right.
These are equal parts. You know, here is our Rand Paul to your Clinton or your
yeah.
Obama. Screw you. No, it's not. He's an idiot and he's a liar on top of it.
Well, and that's his good point.
Yeah.
So you're stating something that is so obvious, but you see, when you got only we got 15% of the people that can't decipher that. When you got 15% of the people that don't know what a moron, when a moron is talking, I mean.
Well, you know, that's like these, we were talking earlier with Earl about Larry Pittman.
Right.
You know, these people who don't believe in education and think that, you know, the library should have one book. So that's exactly
yeah.
what you thought. This is the
revelation. Problem. And only a portion of that book, right?
No, well, George Bush, look, come on. You know, George Bush's library only has two books. One's the Bible, the other one's the thing about the goat. So why is it up to
oh.
Harry, hey, 50% of George Bush's library.
Yeah. Hey, now, y'all be fair. If you've ever seen those videotapes of Bush right after 9/11, you can see he was just as startled and confused as the rest of America. He didn't know what was going on. Now, Dick Cheney did, but he didn't know what was going on. And so, you remember they flew him around the country
right.
for a day
yeah.
or so?
Yeah.
That was
yeah.
kind of sad.
Well, you know, the thing is
that
when Bush Jr. goes to his library, they say, turn the books upside down. You know you can't read the books just straight up. Turn upside down. Especially that one with my pet goat.
Yeah, I want to see the wing devoted to his illustrious military career.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah,
the wing.
And stuff.
Wing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. As a matter of fact,
one
paycheck.
They have a space in here now for we did the. On the right.
So choked up about
I get
it.
So choked up talking about
yeah.
it. We have Colbert did a piece on
Rand polio diet.
No, he did the thing. He did the thing on the Russians. That was
Russians.
Yeah, no.
They're just putting me on.
Just now, you know, Rand Paul does know. Not Ron Paul. Stephen Colbert does know his Russian. Okay? But just listen to this.
Folks, I'm sure you know this, but America's
country's relationship with Russia continues to degrade. But finally, a truly strong leader has stepped up to punish Russia. And no surprise, it's Vladimir Putin. Jim?
Vladimir Putin is striking back against the West's economic sanctions, today banning food imports to Russia for 1 year.
For the next year, they are banning all imports of beef, pork, fruit, vegetable, poultry, seafood, cheese, and milk in all forms, fresh, frozen, processed, whatever, and this applies to the European Union, Australia, Canada, and Norway.
Yes, Putin is imposing a ban on food imports from all major countries. And Norway. I mean, face it, nobody wants lutefisk. His sanctions cast a wide net, banning everything from Australian beef to Latvian and Lithuanian pork to Moldovan fruit, a relief to the Moldovan people, who all really had their eye on that pear. These sanctions strike at the heart of Putin's worst enemies, the Russian people.
Russia relies on imports for 40% of its food, so experts say Putin is only hurting his own country.
Yes, Putin is cutting off his nose to spite his face, and Russians are scrambling to get that fresh nose meat. Because they sure as hell are not going to get any of our chicken.
Among the items on the list that are now blocked from Russia are U.S. chickens.
Russia is the second largest buyer of U.S. chicken. Yes, Russia has now choked off our chicken. But if Russia wants to mess with American business, I intend to fight back with my 9-part plan.
Yeah, and see, I didn't play the whole thing. Because the 9-part plan was he took out a bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken,
right.
And then he took out some bourbon chicken, and then he took out some bourbon. So
nice.
The thing is that we have all this going for us. Now we're looking on here about the cautions of new airstrikes. You know, McCain is saying, hey, we need to bomb them. So they'll never come back. We need to kill every one of them that's on the mountain. I mean, what do we think this moron is going to say?
Could you imagine him being
judged? Yeah, of course I can imagine being judged. But not for long. Not for long. So we have
we've got a truly chaotic situation right now, both in Ukraine and we've got significant problems. Syria, Iraq. Egypt is still unstable.
See how quiet it got?
Yeah.
She got stuck.
She's lost in the forest.
She's lost in the forest. Yes.
But the thing with Russia is particularly troubling on two fronts, because not only is it, you know, a return to war footing in Europe, which is always a bad idea. But with the whole Ukrainian, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to sanction that and we're going to tit for tat back and forth and be angry at each other. You know, what it's having the effect of doing is it's driving, and this is, you know, Putin brought this on himself, but anyway, it's driving Russia out of the European fold, which we have been bringing them into, trying to get them into NATO,
right,
and trying to get them involved. And then now they're going more and more toward a Chinese-Soviet alliance. Chinese-Russian alliance. And that is a really dark scenario that we don't want to see happen. Because if we ever have a huge Russian-Chinese bloc against the world, that's a significant problem. And I think that it's a very bad direction. So the Russian crisis is very, very different in complexion than the Middle Eastern crisis.
Oh, absolutely.
But these are real complex things.
And
as a matter of fact,
it's a lot worse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's much more serious because you're dealing with a superpower and a former superpower, rising superpower and an older superpower. But
well,
this is a bad thing. But that's why we need somebody like Obama or Clinton, somebody who is a deep thinker, intellectual, and...
No, that's the problem why we're like this, Al, because you got you intellectuals trying to tell us people with our guns what to do with them.
God will tell me. That's the fear to me.
Because you know there is a war on white people now.
Well, see, that's what I'm talking about. We need to quit focusing on those overseas, you know, because they're just they're non-Christian ragheads. We don't like them anyway. So we need to come back here where the real war is.
Right. That's
the war of whites.
That's right. Well, the Tea Party, this is a Tea Party figure.
Mo Brooks. Tea Party, what?
Tea Party, you know, except there's no big Cheshire Cat. Okay, so just listen to this, what was said on Hardball about Mr. Mo Brooks.
Not just Steve King feeding off racial issues. After yesterday's circus stunt, the Tea Party Congressman Mo Brooks blamed the president for declaring a war on whites. Brooks went even further. In an interview with the local Huntsville Times, he said, quote, what the Democrats are doing with their dividing America by race is they're waging a war on whites, and I find that repugnant. They're attacking by the Democrats openly soliciting votes of people based on skin color. They, in turn, are attacking whites based on skin color, and that's wrong. Nobody should be attacked based on skin color. We got that. I don't know of a single Republican who has made an appeal for votes based on skin color. Okay, Gene, you grew up with it.
What I grew up with was kind of more sophisticated and subtle than that,
right? White power was a phrase I heard. But anyway, this guy's a U.S. congressman today.
Today,
in
Alabama, he's talking about a war on whites. It's breathtaking, really. And he got a second bite at that apple, too, because, you know, he said this stuff in a radio interview. And then Birmingham newspaper went to him and said,
is that what you really mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
like,
Michael, but
you've got to defend
this, political party.
Let me be very clear. I do not have to defend crazy.
He was very dignified on the show last week.
But, again, this is speaking to a stereotyped fear that more and more whites are having in various parts of the country as the demographics in this country change.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they're now having to figure out how to grasp with this new reality that in 5, 10, 15 years, the white majority will be the minority.
But Gene, you came from South Carolina. There's always been a large population percentage-wise of African Americans in the Deep South, the Cotton South. It's always been a case.
Sure.
We checked his district, 17% African American. Mm-hmm. That's not a huge number in the Deep South. Mm-hmm. That's sort of like you get in Alabama, South Carolina, Mississippi. That's where people grew up.
Yeah.
My point is, why is he so scared right now? He's a mature man.
Because a black guy is president, Chris, do you think that has anything to do with it?
Number one. And number two.
You've been into that peach really well. I saw you delightfully eating into that peach.
The demographics of the South are changing, too. The growth in Hispanics in the South, the growth of Asians.
How many black senators do we have from the South?
One.
Yeah, he's a Republican.
Tim Scott.
So it's not like they're taking over.
No, but again, it's about the demographic shift, and the landscape is getting smaller and smaller and smaller for folks who fear that.
And the only Hispanics we have in the U.S. Senate from the South are Rubio and Cruz. You count them.
Yeah.
So it's strange. Strange attacking going on here.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It's a very strange attack. Anyway, when it comes to racial politics, Mo Brooks is anything but insane, especially when it comes to his view of Hispanics entering this country illegally. This is how Brooks pitched himself to voters during his first term in office.
As your congressman on the House floor, I'll do anything short of shooting them. Anything that is lawful, it needs to be done because illegal aliens need to quit taking jobs from American citizens.
Okay, he's going to shoot them. The jobs, and first of all, I don't know if these jobs were posted. Some of them are pretty tough jobs, you know, but he wants to shoot them. This is your crowd, by the way. You chose to be a Republican.
This is an outlier for our party.
Okay.
I would not use this as representative of where Republicans are.
Well, you know, as they say on the highway, there's no news till there's an accident.
That's right.
That's news.
That's
maybe
news.
These are accidents. But I'm afraid they're becoming more
the highway
difficult. And Gene has heard this before, too.
Well,
you get the letters. You don't get the right kind of mail yet.
No, this whole white victimization thing. It's out there, and it becomes more intense. as they become more and more weaker.
How does it make it work for 350 years? Years of work about a single payday. Isn't that an idea that White came up with? Right? Remember that deal? Anyway, thank you, Michael Steele.
Okay.
Inflation. Thank you, Gene Robinson. Thank you, Michael Steele. Come on.
No. They are taking jobs away from us. What job can one of those people on the border take away from you and I? Right. Anyone?
To begin with, they're illegals. They can't have jobs.
So wait a minute. What do you mean they can't have jobs?
Well, they can't get paid. They don't have. They can't be taxed. They can't do anything else because they're illegal, right?
So why do they have so many jobs, as they're saying?
Would that be under the table, Mike?
No, I see them. They're supposedly working in all these yards out here.
Yeah, cash in hand, right? Is that what they? Is that? I mean,
no,
so
I
rich
money.
People who
I check.
Rich people who so, are illegally employing.
Oh, as nannies and as dog walkers,
yeah.
And
so
cleaning
then,
their guards
so,
and cleaning their bathrooms.
Where's the criminality in the person from overseas who is brought over to be given cash? Or the rich person who brought them over and is giving them cash so they don't have to pay a full wage to an American worker.
Are you saying that Europeans do that?
Well, you know.
Are you saying those
rich
white Europeans from France and Germany and Italy and
well,
they're
and,
doing
and this
that?
Gets back to Representative Brooks, by the way. I think he's confused. You know, we were earlier talking to Earl. Because we said, we like the fact that he was a historian. He
yeah.
knew things. And in the knowing, it's always in the details. See?
But that's because
and
he went to school.
So I think what happens with Mo Brooks, by the way, his whole little line, the world fights, it would have been really funny if it was Mel Brooks. Unfortunately, it's not satire. It's real. So it's not funny, right? So Mo Brooks, I think the problem with him is he sees on the news, he gets all confused. He sees, like, pictures out of the Ukraine, and he sees Vladimir Putin running into Georgia and all these other countries.
And he thinks it's Atlanta.
And it, yeah, he's like,
oh,
he's like,
God.
Look. He sees a news report about the Caucasus wars and the invasion in Georgia, and he's thinking, it's a war on Caucasians in Georgia.
Oh, just the relation.
I think that's where he got confused.
Oh.
But, yeah. I'm trying to make light of this, but these people infuriate me, and this is scary stuff when you have an actual congressman saying this. This is a congressman that says the war on whites launched by the Democratic Party, and quote, it is part of the strategy of Barack Obama that he implemented in 2008 to divide us all on race, on sex, creed, envy, and class warfare. You know,
on
this
sex?
Is mad.
How do you divide us on sex, man and woman? Or
don't even, you know. Maybe it's like that thin form man dog sex or whatever.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
know. Whatever. I don't even want to know. But it is scary stuff when you have a representative of the United States. Again, this is talking about the commander in chief, the president of the United States, saying that he has launched a war on white people. What planet are these fools from?
Well, you know, they're back to impeachment talk now.
Because that's all they got.
About,
you know, still got health care. That didn't work out. 60 votes in.
Let's
so.
See how they got there.
Okay.
How did they get to impeachment? We say,
well
according to John Boehner, it's all a scam.
It all started with a stain on a dress. That was the first time they tried to impeach him.
Right.
But see, it's another Democrat, so now they got to find something else. And since Michelle didn't let any women near Obama, they got to do something different.
Well, according to this, it's a scam by the White House and the president because they are trying to rally their people to get money to show up in this election year. The latter part of what is true, over the weekend, Democrats say they raised $2.1 million, largely using the specter of impeachment.
So I love this. In their world, you know how everything is Obama's fault? So in their world, even impeachment.
Yes.
So to impeach a president is to charge him with high crimes and misdemeanors and remove him from office.
Okay.
So in their world,
the president is impeaching himself
because he's not
in
doing
order
that.
To scam the Republicans.
Oh, so you mean?
So, you know, I mean, what?
So in other words, if he doesn't do anything, he needs to be impeached. If he does suit something, he needs to impeach. Because
he, always,
he
yeah,
needs to do exactly what we tell them.
He always needs to be impeached.
Wait a minute. But let me understand this now. Isn't the legislative branch a different branch of government from the executive branch?
It is.
Okay. All right, we got that settled. Now, so where does it say in the legislative branch that they have anything whatsoever to do with telling the president how to use his executive powers?
Doesn't it? That's why he's called the executive branch. He executes
the laws. Now, so...
They legislate.
They create the law.
That's why they have these weird terms, legislature and stuff. Legislate, and then he executes the law. So when they hand him a law, he can either sign it and say, I will then agree this becomes a law, or veto it, send it back, and you work on it, send it back again.
But there's also another way. He don't have to sign it.
Well, but if he signs
it. And then it's called a pocket veto if nothing is done on it.
Right. Well, it's still saying that because it's not been signed.
That's right.
But you've got an executive is distinct from a legislature. A legislature is creating.
That's just like
an executive is executing
the head of IBM and the guy working on the line at the factory.
Yeah. So here's another one.
Yeah.
Gets even better. The Constitution gives one particular branch of government, which is legislative, and then subdivides the powers of impeachment. Only one branch, which is legislative, has the power of impeachment. Not the Supreme Court, not the president, not anybody else. And in the legislature, only the House can bring articles of impeachment. And only the Senate can then try the articles of impeachment. And it's all done in-house. It's all done together. They can't give it to the Supreme Court. They can't give it to, you know, your local Bob's,
local bar. Yeah, right.
So how in the world does let's get his title correct, Speaker of the House of Representatives claim that the president is in charge of impeachment and is scamming the country with impeachment? It is literally, by the Constitution, solely his power alone to bring articles.
But now run it by me again. He says the president.
It's a scam started by the president.
Right.
So the impeachment, even if Obama ran around trying to scare up impeachment, the only person on earth who can bring articles of impeachment
is
John Boehner. What are you talking about?
That's just like saying, you know what? The Dallas Cowboys go to every single game this year, and I go around telling everybody in this city of Shaw, Cowboys are going to win this year. So that means the Cowboys are going to win this year? Don't you have to talk to the Cowboys and talk to the other teams?
I have this really, really bad Cowboys joke I want to share with you, but I don't want to be mean to you, Mike. I know you love
the Cowboys. Don't be mean. And don't be mean. This goes – all right, so we're going to go down the timeline here.
Well, one thing that – look, now, and that was just the technical details. So the only person that can do anything is John Boehner. The House is the only body of the entire government that can bring impeachment. And all of this talk did start from them. Do you want to read this whole part about Sarah Palin?
Yeah, we know it was her.
Sarah,
the half-governor.
Crazy Palin. The half-governor. Who's always saying stuff. Well, they said the current round of – because you remember, this has been going on since he was elected.
That's right.
To impeach.
6 years.
So this isn't like something he brought up, you know, last week. But anyway, they said this current round came back up into the public, you know, eye again because Sarah Palin brought it up. She kicked it into high gear when she was in a Breitbart editorial earlier this month.
In a bar?
Talking about impeaching the president yet again, because, you know, that's one of her favorite things to talk about. And then they said she's even parlayed that
editorial into a video that she helped launch her own new website with, because, you know, she's trying to start her own Republican Party.
Right.
But anyway, so given the fact that Sarah Palin yet again did this and has this video on her own website, yet still Boehner says somehow Obama created this whole thing. I mean, again, it's ludicrous. They live in fantasy land.
There's what they call a signing statement.
And what would that be like?
Now, when a law is created, this can't be out there, when a law is created, and it can only be created by the House of Representatives, they pass this law and says, the law says there'll be no drinking of Heineken on the floor of the House until after 6 p.m. starting August 16th. Okay. The president gets this law because that's all it says. It didn't say, we tell you, you cannot do this. They said the law, they passed the law, and the law says there's no drinking on the House floor till after 6 p.m. on the 16th.
Mm-hmm.
President gets it, and he says, you know, I can't have any drinking on the House floor on the 16th after 6 p.m. It cannot be done until the 24th. And the reason is because we're going to have 4,000 children from various cities, states, and countries visiting the Capitol, and we want them to be on the floor to touch the desks, and everything else. So we don't want any beer smelling like a saloon there. What he does is he has secretary, people there in the office, type up something. It's called a signing statement. And the president says, I determine that this law shall not go into effect until the 24th of the month.
Mm-hmm.
And he signs it.
Right.
That's the end of the story. Now, they can't come back. Y'all know we want it at 6 o'clock. Their job is just to pass. What was that you said before that the president does? What does he do?
He executes.
He executes the law. That means he puts the law in motion.
Right.
But only he, not the U.S. House, not the Senate, not Ned, my next-door neighbor, decides when the law should be used, but it should be used as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But it's up to the president to determine when that time is. That's what a signing statement is. So he cannot be sued. Well, of course, you can sue ant. But you can't win on the grounds that he's not doing his job.
Right.
But they can be sued for not doing their job when in Virginia they have 2,000 bridges and 1,950 of them are broken down and will collapse at any minute, and they don't pass a law to fix them.
Right.
They're not doing their job,
right.
And that is their job.
And you could say, by definition, if this is the least productive Congress
ever,
they aren't doing their job.
They're not doing their job.
And I don't care if you rename the
president. Because the president don't have to produce any laws.
No.
They have to produce
the
laws.
They have to produce the laws. Again, the president only signs the law or doesn't sign the law. That's a veto or signs it. And then a signing statement is a pronouncement that he puts with the law. And by the way, they're filed with the United States Code of Congressional and Administrative Needs.
Absolutely.
But they're filed right beside the law, and it just has nuances.
That's right.
If you will. Like you stated, a date it'll start or whatever. And every president has been doing this. It isn't Obama. He didn't invent this.
Oh,
by
the way,
mm-hmm.
he didn't invent it.
Right.
That's for damn sure.
Well, see, and this is the big thing they're using against him. And the reason, I think the reason, my personal opinion is, one of the reasons they use this, you know, they always, the Republicans are very good at trying to call foul on the other person for what they do. One of the big complaints against George W. Bush, so much so that there was a task force convened in 2006 that ruled against him from the American Bar Association, that he abused his authority because he issued more signing statements than any president ever, more than all other presidents
put
combined.
Right.
And he also wouldn't file them because, you know, other presidents filed whatever the signing statement is.
So he wouldn't even file them?
Held secret. So nobody knew what the signing statements were. So not only was he doing it more than anybody else, he also wouldn't let you know the details. So then
that
they filed.
That smells of Dick Cheney to me.
Yeah, right, exactly. So there was a task force that ruled against him and stated that he was unduly abusing the law and modifying laws beyond their intention, and he was undermining the rule of law in America and had threatened the constitutional system because he was intentionally changing laws rather than implementing them. So that was the issue under Bush, George W. Bush. Because of that, I think it's one of the reasons they're doing this whole signing statement thing on Obama. But anyway, signing statements have pre-existed both Bush and Obama. So it wasn't either one of them creating them, but George W. got in trouble for abusing them. So that was that controversy. Okay. But to just jump back one second, the broader thing that pisses me off about this, I'm sorry, can't say that, can I?
You already did.
The thing is that they claim, you know, Obama brought this up and he's just, we didn't want to impeach him. Because what happened was, as soon as they started talking about impeachment, they saw the polls weren't with him. The public wasn't with him. So then now they're trying to say Obama created the impeachment bureau. They've been doing this since the man went in office. And what, just one thing, they've talked about this since he was elected the first time. So it's not new. They talked about it when he did health care. You know, they've talked about it when he's done everything. When he tried to pull out of Iraq, you know, everything. But I just want to show you one example.
Yeah.
Here is a newspaper article, Wednesday, November 5th, 2008. That's pretty early, isn't it? 2008?
A little bit.
A group of over 700 members was founded. Impeach Barack Obama.
January 2008?
No. November 5th, 2008.
You mean the next day? The next day?
It was already founded, and listen, they set up a Facebook page, they set up an official page, started raising money for the impeachment. So don't tell me that Obama this month, in an effort to raise money for the coming election, started fanning the flames of impeachment when they had an official group up and a Facebook page.
What was the name
the
of this?
Day he was elected.
What was the name of this group?
It was called Impeach Obama. there was no playing
no
with words. You know, it was Impeach Obama group. No, but I mean, this is pathetic. So I don't want to hear. It infuriates me how they change reality to fit the need. You know.
Well, there is a thing here called a Congressional Research Service report issued on September 17, 2007, used a metric, the percentage of signing statements that contain objections to provisions of the bill being signed into law.
So this is something that president would do would object to certain parts of a law or something like that.
Right.
Is that what you're saying? Okay.
The president issued 250. President Reagan issued 250 signing statements.
So back, okay, Reagan, 250. All right.
86 of which, 34%, contained provisions objecting to one or more of the statutory provisions signed into law.
Okay.
George W. Bush issued 220. 8 signing statements, 107 of which, 47%.
So almost 50%
right.
of all of his had objections.
Are raised objections. President Clinton, his power proved to be largely constant when that was preceding the two administrations. In turn, President Clinton made aggressive use of the signing statements, issuing 338. 70 of which 18% raised constitutional legal objections. Well, that's because he was in trouble with Monica Lewinsky. Okay. President George W. Bush, which continued with this practice.
Yeah, but listen to that for one second before you get to George. Now, we were talking earlier about George. You said George W., but it's George H.W. But, so George H.W. had almost 50% objections in his signing statements. Reagan had 34% objections in his. Clinton only had 18% objections. So he wasn't objecting to the laws, just implementing.
Right. Okay.
And then we get to George W., our favorite wonky little boy. So what did our pet president do?
He issued 152 signing statements, 118 of which, 78%, contained some type of challenge or objection.
78% of his were objections. 18% of Clinton's were objections. So you can see right then why the American Bar Association ruled against him and said that he was changing law rather than implementing law. So you're moving to, 78% changing objections.
80% did. Come on.
That's crazy. So this is what we're talking about. That was why the challenge came up, but this is also why the Republicans are pushing back and fighting and saying Obama's the one who's doing the signing statement.
And Junior broke all records using signing statements to challenge about 1,200 sections of bills over his 8 years in office, about twice the number of challenges by all previous presidents combined, according to the dates compiled by Chris Kelly.
Political science professor. Okay, so you've got a man who challenged laws more than twice more than every president combined. and they want to sue Obama. See? That's what cracks me up. You've got
The thing is that they don't care.
When they did it, it was fine.
Good. Because it's not about us. It's about you people. Now, we'll watch this for 2 hours.
You, of course, are talking about the war on us white people.
Oh,
isn't that what you meant, Michael?
Absolutely.
I'm sorry. I thought that's what you meant.
I mean, can't be different. Now, for almost 3 hours.
All Caucasoids look alike.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Okay. Looking at this for the last 2.5 hours, all there is on there, we're going back to Iraq. He sent up about 2 or 3 planes.
Whoa.
Yeah, they
and
said,
now we're back
said,
in Iraq.
Earlier they said that we dropped 2 bombs.
Two bombs. 2 500-pound bombs.
Yeah.
The bombs are normally you carry in your back pocket. They 2,000-pound bombs. They 1,000-pound bombs. Now, they probably could have done this with drones.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's trying to tamp that down. Since we've had such a
sterling record,
bad record in Pakistan, that we don't want to spread the joy to the other parts of the world.
You don't want to spread the joy to the other parts of the world. Well, I think there's always enough joy to spread around. Why not? I think
we've actually made a turning point. We've pulled out of Iraq. We're pulling out right now out of Afghanistan. All of those drones we've been using for the last decade, we're now redeploying to Amazon. Not the Amazon, but Amazon. They'll be bringing books to you pretty soon,
right to
your front door. See, that's an effective use of military technology in domestic life. That's what we want.
Well, right now, we are going to play a little
from the show that's coming up, September the 6th.
And what show would that be?
That would be Blue Magic with Richard Pratt live.
At the Neighborhood Theater.
At the Neighborhood Theater.
511 East 36th Street, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28205.
And
right in the heart of Nuda.
In the heart of Nuda. Let's listen.
He's just a face painted on a smile, jumping up and down and making people happy.
know what we have been doing for the last 10 years?
What was that? A decade.
Well, I can tell you what Obama was doing. He was fighting his time to get into the White House. But science.
He was actually working on his impeachment.
No, he wasn't working on it. Well, he was. Yeah, that's right. He was working on it. But science, you know that outlaw
that they deny
industry?
Exists? Yes.
Because, you know, there is nothing past the stars. I mean, there's nothing past us. The planets don't exist. We can see, but that's only our imagination.
Right. Well, the world is flat.
The world is flat. We've had a little thing, it was pretty big, called Rosetta, which is going and flying to a rock, a comet, out in space called 67P. And it's taken 10 years to get there. It had to really, it was moving. What it did was, they sent it around the Earth, when they sent it up to go around, to get the speed to go around the Earth. Mm-hmm. And then when it got aligned, it used Mars, when Mars got close to us, as an additional slingshot to get speed to go off into this daggone distance. And on August the 6th, 2014, it approached the comet to a distance of about 100 kilometers, 62 miles.
By the way, I just want to let everybody know, we were moving 55,000 kilometers per hour.
Which is how many miles per hour?
It's kilometers. We don't do, we're scientists. We don't have to do English math here. Come on.
Well, 55,000
kilometers
an
hour.
That's about 25,000 miles an hour.
That's how.
Is that right? About 25,000 miles an hour?
And we did not bash into it. That's what's amazing.
We slowed down.
And are orbiting it.
And it at a relative velocity of 3.3 feet per second. Can you believe that? The first spacecraft ever to rendezvous with a comet with the intention to enter its orbit and land!
Yeah, because we did do that one where we slammed.
We just threw the rock at it. But
this one is flying around it right now. Mm-hmm. And here's my favorite quote. The European Space Agency's senior scientific advisor, mm-hmm. Mark, what's his name, McCaughrean says, for 10 years we've been waiting in the car to get to the scientific Disneyland,
mm-hmm.
and we haven't even got out of the car yet, but now look what's outside our window.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen this picture of this comet? It looks pretty cool.
Yes, a big old rock, look like a potato or something.
Yep.
But anyway, here's the...
it's lumpy bumpy.
Here's a little bit of information on that from our reporters.
In the making of the spacecraft Rosetta becomes the first ever to catch a comet. For scientists, Thomas Ryder of the European Space Operations Center hope Rosetta will help unlock some of the secrets of the solar system. But first, there's an even greater challenge to overcome. In November, they will attempt to land the probe on the comet's surface.
We hope, of course, to find organic molecules on the comet, but perhaps also molecules which are relevant for the creation of life on Earth. That would be spectacular. We expect to find and see new things. At the moment, nobody has an idea about what it really looks like on such a comet, and so we are very excited about it.
It has taken Rosetta 10 years, 5 months, and 4 days to reach the comet, a roughly 3-by-5-kilometer rock discovered in 1969. Soon, scientists hope, it will begin to reveal its secrets.
Now, here's what's so amazing about this. This thing was flying, and then it went through different macerations where it in 2007 Rosetta performed a high performance sweep by Mars because it was launched in 2004 if I remember correctly. 2004.
Yeah, March 2nd, it was 2004.
And then what happened was that in 2007 it flew, it also performed a Mars swing by and then returned images. The craft compiled its flyby by an asteroid 2867 Steins in September 2008 and of 221 and of 21. Okay, whatever that is, 21, it must be another one. 21 Lutetia in July 2010. And on the 20th of January 2014, Rosetta was taken out of a 31-month hibernation. It put it, and what it did was
it saved energy.
It folded up its wings that because it gets all its energy from the sun, and then after 31 months, it unfolded its wings, turned around so it could get the reflection of the sun to warm up all the equipment on board, and then they turned it on, and it worked like it was around the corner.
Yep.
And over the next following months, a series of thruster burns would slow Rosetta relative to the 67P and will rendezvous on the 6th of August. Well, it did.
Right.
Is there ready?
Yep.
And so I don't know how long it'll take us to get the pictures back.
Right. Well, they've already been taking pictures of it.
Right.
They're going to eventually land on it and start analyzing
right.
it, which
right.
is going to be awesome.
That will be awesome.
But
see, now it must take, golly, it's going to be take, it's got to take at least, see, it didn't say how far that was away, did it?
That's cool. Here, they said, you know, they've been flying for 10 years. They said they've done 10 orbital correction maneuvers over the 10 years.
Can you believe that?
To get there. Even they flew between, like you said, Mars and Jupiter, around the asteroids, all this other stuff.
Yeah, well, you had to get through the asteroid belt.
Right.
So it
and then they went and did that. So, you know, this sounds like, you know, I love all this stuff. But they have a close approach trajectory insertion, which was a caddy burn, lasted for 6 minutes, 26 seconds, and pulled them into orbit around it. And then once they're at the comet, this is the cool part that I'm a geek and I love this stuff because it reminds me of the Voyager missions. You remember
mm-hmm.
Carl Sagan got them to put those discs on the Voyager.
Yeah, so that
had
in Star Trek.
Yeah. So they could play the record, you know. And
the motion picture.
Yeah, and, you know, they put the music and the words of mankind on this disc, right? Well, this one, since we have, you know, it's smaller. We didn't put a huge record on it like the other one, the gold record.
Well, how big is it? Is it smaller than Voyager? I mean, Voyager.
Yeah.
It's not smaller than Voyager, is it? No.
Probably smaller than Voyager. But anyway, we put a micro-etched nickel alloy Rosetta disc on it that the Long Now Foundation donated to the project. But it was inscribed with 13,000 pages of text in over 1,200 languages from Earth.
Okay, now suppose these people who pick this up can't read
awesome.
Or don't have a computer.
But they're just going to, you know, take it to the comet and look at that. Now, I just think that type of stuff is just geeks me out. That is awesome beyond belief.
Well,
you know, why in
okay.
the world would you send 13,000 pages of text to a comet anyway? But still, it's
well,
cool.
Well, but you see, is that okay? Someone picks it up, but the problem is, suppose the person that picks it up doesn't have a computer.
And
doesn't know, is it in Word or is it in Linux?
It's micro etched. So if you have a magnifying glass, you could.
Oh, it's micro etched.
Just saying, hey, look at this.
I thought you would say it was a Microsoft.
No, micro etched.
And then what would happen if they had a problem? Who would they call?
No, much like
the Geek Squad?
Much like the stuff we find, you know, that ancient alien show, when we're digging at a pyramid and we find some ancient artifact. If we looked at it, instead of saying it's micro etched, we say, hey, look, this disc is all scratched up.
Right.
And then we throw it aside in the museum. So, yeah, that's what the aliens would do. Hey, look, this is all scratched up. I just still think that stuff is cool, and that's why I love Charles Singer.
See if you see how big this thing is. I'd like to know how big it is.
How big
I it was,
the Rosetta is?
I thought it, because I thought that the wingspan, when it opens up,
well, the comet
was
itself,
about 50. No, the Rosetta.
The comet itself is 2.5 miles.
Right. But, I thought this thing was, when you opened up, was at least 100-foot wingspan or more.
By the way, they've already flown by a Great Depression with a 150-meter-high cliff.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's pretty cool.
Don't need to go down there.
Yeah, that'd be great. Just crash right into land in a crater somewhere. Let's see if I can find
13,000 pages of text in 12 different languages.
Isn't that
2,100 different languages.
Yeah, that's just, to me, that's
blown. None of the languages that they speak in outer space.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, yeah, see, maybe they just have that little light bar on there that goes.
Oh, yeah, right. That would have to be
that, that'll help.
I don't
actually see the actual size of the Rosetta on any of these articles.
Unfolding.
So I'd have to look back.
I looked at it.
I'd have to look on the European Space Agency.
I saw it the other night, but I just forgot to. I thought I was going to remember it, but I didn't remember it. It must be getting old.
Here are the little things that I like, being a total sci-fi geek. One of the scientists talking about when he sees this, like Miratu said, we flew through a big depression, 150-meter-high cliff. They found rubble piles at the bottom, all this kind of stuff. Then we found smooth areas and plains. There was a mega 1,000 meters deep. They found all this kind of stuff, right? They found outgassing visible but by the neck, because it's a comet. Those things start erupting gases. But anyway, I like how they describe we flew by one area where we saw a village of house-sized boulders.
Oh, I thought you said a village of people.
The
village people.
Some were 10 meters in size and bigger, blah, blah, blah. But I just think that's a village of house-sized boulders. I'm right there, and I'm chasing an alien.
So we're landing on a comet like in Armageddon?
Yeah, pretty much.
So that means when the sun hits it, it's going to start exploding?
All comets do that, yes. That's what they do. When they heated by the sun, they start erupting their tails.
So then,
that's why they're comets.
So then, when we land this thing down there, we got a couple of minutes to get off it? Or is it just going to be
floating
in space?
Well, it may last a little while, but eventually it will be blown away.
Okay. So, So
how cool is that? Come on, people. This is just awesome. I love science.
Yeah, well,
this is stuff I could devote whole shows to science, but we got to instead talk about the retard to think that there's a war on white people.
Well, now, there's another thing we need to talk about. There's something else. There is, if I can find it here, I don't know where it's at, but there's always something that...
Well, there's this really pretty graph here.
A pretty graph.
That talks about a graph.
Oh, the graph.
It talks about the tools that neuroscientists are using to analyze big data.
As a matter of fact, I don't know how come I didn't.
That they have. Unlocked how neurons work.
Yes, and I thought I had put something on that here, but evidently
your neurons aren't working.
Put it my neurons. Oh yes, I did. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I knew it. You see. You can't fool me. I know I would do that correctly. So what they're saying now is that, hey, we're going to compare you to a zebrafish.
Oh.
Because you know why?
Because
a zebrafish brain functions the neurons in the brain, and the cells. Function the same way in all living things.
Oh, wow.
So, listen, this is what they said. There's this guy, his name is Kerner from, and you need to listen to this, where it's from. Just listen to it. I'll talk about it after.
This is a breakthrough of mobile fruit fly embryo. It's an unprecedented view. Every single dot represents a single cell. Philip Keller and his fellow researchers at the Genelia Research Campus in Virginia are tracking each of them as they organize into a working brain.
We basically want to understand how development happens. What are the fundamental principles the rules, the mechanisms of development. How do you actually get from one cell to a complex multicellular organism in a very robust manner?
Answers to those questions have always eluded scientists, but now, thanks to new computer software that can process massive amounts of data in near real time, mapping how cells form into a complex nervous system is possible. A couple of years ago, Keller and his group developed the simultaneous multi-view light sheet microscope, which captures three-dimensional images of cells with unprecedented speed and precision over a period of days. But organizing what amounted to terabytes worth of data into visualizations the scientists could study took weeks. The new software can do it in a matter of minutes. Researcher Fernando Amat says the team have developed a color system that allows them to track individual cells during brain development.
We assign a color, a random color, to each cell at the beginning of start time point zero, and then we propagate this color based on the tracking information. So what you can see is basically how each single cell, as they divide, they go to different parts of the organism, and so they become kind of color clusters. So you see basically how each, let's say, tissue or part of the embryo, you know, where it came from, what was the original cell that it came from.
And by following the paths of these cells, the scientists hope to create a blueprint of how brains form. Keller says that the researchers are currently using the technology to study the development in fruit flies and zebrafish. But he says even though these organisms are simple compared to the complex developments of human nervous systems, there's still a lot to be learned.
If you compare the anatomy of the brain in a zebrafish to that of a human, there's a lot of similarities. A lot of the detailed structure of the compartments, the organization of the brain, these principles are often shared between different species. So if you learn something in one context, you can hopefully apply it also in a different context, especially to human development.
And that, says Keller, is the ultimate goal, to gain insight on how the human brain develops and functions. He says the more we know, the better equipped we will be to start tackling diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's.
So we're all zebrafish now. That's cool. Let's see, they're getting close. Do you hear that? The important part is now that they're mapping these neurons, finding out how they work, they will be able to cure, hopefully, things like, you know, Alzheimer's. It'll be
But how could they cure Mo Brooks' brain? What if his neurons isn't firing? Or maybe it's the beta of them that are not firing.
Like my dad used to say, you can't argue with stupid. Some things, there's just no cure for
them. This is what they're telling me about me.
Because, look, there are physiological issues, you know, like your child is born with a, you know, undeveloped brain or
hypersomatic
or something like that.
Did they notice that?
That's a physiological issue they can't really do anything about. Like, oops, sorry, you have genetic problems. And those other concerns, that's all choice. They just don't want to know better.
That reminds me of a great leader because in the story, there was this film called The Professionals.
Uh-huh.
Lee Marvin. Great, great film. You need everybody out there. You need to get and watch this movie. It's one of the greatest westerns ever made. Well, Lee Marvin and his crew, Robert Ryan and Burt Lancaster, they all run and grab Claudia Cardinelli because she was kidnapped by, of course, Jack Palance, the ruthless Mexican killer. Ralph Bellamy is saying, this is my wife, and he stole it from me. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, they kind of find out that was a lie. He kidnapped Claudia Cardinelli, Ralph Bellamy, and took her back across the border, and Raza was his name. Jack Palance, he comes and kidnaps her back. Mm-hmm. So he can't go into Mexico territory, so he hires these professionals. They go through all this, and Burt Lancaster rode with Raza. He knew them all. Raza knew him. They get him, and at the end, Raza's all shot up, but he's not dying, and they bring him on a buckboard, and they get him at the border, and Lee Marvin says, okay, we got, and now they kind of figure out that they actually love one another, Claudia Cardinelli
and Raza Jack Palance. And he says, well,
this,
no,
this
he kidnapped me.
This would be after the dynamite.
Oh, yeah, this is after. Wait a second.
Oh, I
so,
love
So this at the end. This at the end. So anyway, so Robert Ryan, so Harry Belafonte is, ah, you got him. You brought him back. And he goes over to Ralph Bellamy, goes over to him, grabs Corleone, says, come here.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to run away from me again. And Lee Marvin stops and says, wait a minute. We haven't turned her over to you yet because we haven't got paid. So she is not your property yet. He's okay. Yeah, you guys want to get paid. Go on, give out the gold. Give the gold to them. So Ralph Bellamy looks at him, looks at Ralph Bellamy and says, yeah, well, we've been having second thoughts about this because come to find out that you were just a dirty old man. And he says, we don't think we're going to go along. He said, well, then you won't get paid. And Ralph Bellamy says to Lee Marvin, he says to him, you bastard. And Lee Marvin says, looks at him and says, as he's getting on his horse, he says, yes, sir. That's right. He says, but you're a self-made man.
Yeah.
And he gets on his horse.
Mine is by birth, but you're a self-made man. You know,
mine
that's the way these guys are.
Birth, but you're a self-made man.
That's what these GOP...
So this is what we're dealing with.
They're self-made idiots. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they're self-made. They've done it all to themselves. So anyway...
Well, maybe we'll find a cure for conservatism in all of this brain scanning that we're doing.
Yeah, we got to send Sylvester Stallone. I'm the cure.
I'm the cure.
That's right. So, all right, so we're nearing... Yeah, and do you know what?
This is the end, my friend.
Oh, no, we got one more thing to talk about. No, we don't have one more thing to... We got finished with everything but one thing.
True enough.
We got... can you believe this?
But...
The impeachment... Is what the only thing we didn't get to?
Yeah, we did cover the impeachment.
Well, and then we 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We got 2 minutes here.
The
House Intelligence Committee has conducted and saw that there was no wrongdoing by the Obama administration 2012 attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya, that killed Ambassador Chris Stevens and the three other Americans. Said Representative Mike Thompson of St. Helena, the second ranking Democrat on the committee.
Right. So they found nothing. And,
found
know,
nothing. Nada. Zippo.
Investigation. But you know where you didn't hear that news?
On Fox News.
Faux news.
That's right. Well, hey,
right.
We are going to go. We didn't get to hear from our...
Oh, well, that's all right.
Yeah, but
we'll hear from next time.
We'll hear from next time. Yes, we will hear from
Hey, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend.
And everybody, you know, what can I say?
And remember.
Remember.
This is a message from your friend there.
Remember.
Only you can prevent ignorance.
Forest fires. Oh.
Educate yourself.
Yes.
Be aware. Don't let people take your future from you. Go out, participate, learn, and vote.
And vote. That's what you have to do.
And you don't
and
have
remember
to vote
what
time
I always
that day
yes.
You can go. You
right.
can go to your church. You can go to your neighborhood.
And,
you can go to your friends,
and just
family.
And just remember this. Good night, everybody.
This is a mass gathering speaking in the library. And it is said that everyone has alphabetized it. If he were to mail a letter without posting, he would soon get there. When it is raining, it is because he's thinking about something sad. He once punched a magician. That's right. You heard me. His blood smells like cologne. His hands feel like rich brown suede. He is the most interesting man in the world.
Yeah.